Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA show!
Back in your life on this Monday, August 26, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the Monday show. Rare Thursday appearance last week, speaking to Conor McGregor. I appreciate everyone who watched. I'll talk about that interview a little later on in the program, but that was fun and somewhat unexpected because usually we're doing Monday and Wednesday shows. I appreciate everyone's interest in that video and all the feedback on it. It was an interesting one and a memorable one for me, but we're back on Mondays doing our regular show. We've got a loaded lineup as always for all of you. And, this is an interesting week because rare off week for the UFC. I think they went 9 straight weekends with a show. We didn't have a UFC event, last weekend, but we did have a Bellator card in Bridgeport that sort of flew under the radar going into the card, but ended up being, in my opinion, one of the most entertaining cards of the year. 14 fights on the card. All of them ended up in a finish of some kind. Submission, knockout, TKO, whatever. All very fun fights. The card flew by, and the undercard was probably better than the main card. How often can you say that about a Bellator card? Like, usually the main card has the interesting names. The undercard has the local draws that they put on there to sell tickets, to be frank. Knowing that they're really truly investing in maybe top one or two fight. Okay. That's a name that we know, but the rest relatively unknown. This time you had all kinds of prospects and they all delivered for the most part. The only one that didn't deliver was Mike Kimble, but the other ones did. You had Aviv Ghazali pull off the quickest submission in Bellator history, the quickest leg lock submission in a major promotion, 11 seconds. That was followed up by Saba Homasi getting a 17-second knockout. Of course, you had the likes of notorious Nick Newell winning in his Bellator debut. We'll talk about him in a second. You had some pretty big performances, some big names, Austin Vanderfort, a.k.a. Mr. Van Zandt. So that was the undercard. And then on the main card, it was headlined by Matt Mitrione versus Sergey Kharitonov too, and it ended up being one of the more bizarre main events that I've ever seen. Mitrione's mouthpiece fell out of his mouth 4 times, and it seemed to clearly distract him, clearly bother him. And early in the second round, he got hit with a big knee, then a right. No, it was an uppercut, then a knee, and ended up getting finished. And he said on Twitter afterwards that it wasn't the mouthpiece that led to his undoing. It was because he lost his usual mouthpiece, had to get a new one, and this is the first time that he wore the new one. And so doesn't that lead you to believe that the mouthpiece was the reason for the undoing? I don't know. I was confused by all of that. But larger picture, fun night, interesting night. And then, of course, this weekend, the UFC is back. And they're going to China. They're 6th time in China. They're going to Shenzhen, China. And they're bringing a title fight. They're bringing Jessica Andrade in her first title defense going up against Zhang Weili. Could it be? First time a Chinese-born fighter wins a UFC belt. And not only wins, she could win in China. You know how big this would be for the business? They just opened up a performance institute in China. In Shanghai. And now you could potentially have a Chinese-born fighter. I mean, this could be one of the greatest strokes of genius that the UFC brass has ever pulled off. Now, of course, she has to win the fight. Jessica Andrade, no slouch, no joke. She is very good. She is very dominant, especially at 115. But Zhang, in case you don't know, she's won 19 in a row. She's looked very good in her first 3 UFC fights. Perhaps she is the one. Perhaps she'll be the first Chinese-born UFC fighter. Okay, so that's kind of the table setter for the day. It's going to be a fun day today on the program. I'll tell you who will be stopping by and when, and then we'll get to our first guest of the day. Matt Brown is back. He's returning on December 14th in Las Vegas against Ben Saunders. He hasn't fought in almost 2 years. Tore his ACL, was thinking about retirement. The immortal Matt Brown is back. Always a great interview, always an honest interview. I'm looking forward to talking to him at 3:45. We'll talk to Jan Błachowicz at 3:30. And I'm going to get the correct pronunciation of his name once and for all. I think it is, as I just said, he's the Polish contender who just knocked out Luke Rockhold back in July. He wants to fight against John Jones later on this year. He's been vocal about that. We'll see if he gets it. First time that he joins us on the program. At 3 o'clock, perhaps my favorite athlete growing up, the one and only Bret Hart, the Hitman, Bret Hart. When I was a kid, I used to go to the doctor and get a shot from the doctor, and the doctor would tell me to close my eyes and think of a happy thought. And what did I think about? I thought of Bret Hart pre-WWE championship or WWF championship at the time, winning the belt, finally winning the belt. That's what I used to think about. That was my happy thought. Now he's going to be on my show today. I've interviewed him once before. It was in July of 2012, prior to UFC 149. It was an incredible moment in my life. He actually drove by himself, met me at some random apartment that we were staying, did the interview. Couldn't have been nicer. Couldn't have been more gracious with his time. And I can't wait to talk to him at 3 o'clock about his great career and everything else going on in his life. That's a huge thrill for me. Jermaine Durandamy will join us at 2:45. She's getting a title shot December 14th against Amanda Nunes. That was announced officially last week. We'll talk to her about that opportunity, what happened with Chris Cyborg, all that and more. How about Brock Weaver, who delivered the best post-fight interview in Contender Series history, the best post-fight interview of the summer? He won his Contender Series debut just a couple weeks ago, and now he's a member of the UFC, returning to action in his official UFC debut in October. I'm looking forward to talking to him, a veteran of the bare knuckle scene as well. At 2:05, we were supposed to be joined by Kat Zingano. We're no longer going to be joined by Kat Zingano. She has asked for a little more time to figure out her situation. She is a free agent now. I hear that talks are going well with one promotion in particular, perhaps close to signing with them, but she asked for a little more time, so I do apologize for that. I will talk a little bit about the Conor McGregor interview, my thoughts on it. We'll share some clips, so stay tuned for that. At 1:20, we'll be joined by MMA's first family, the Van Zants. Paige Van Zant, Austin Vanderfort. Vanderfort won on Saturday in Bridgeport. Remains undefeated in Bellator, and look very good at 185. They'll join us together in studio, so that's going to be a lot of fun. But first, let us go to the Skype machine and say hello to the man who was victorious in the most talked about fight on Saturday in Connecticut. He joined us in studio last Monday, walked into his Bellator debut on a one fight deal, and blew the roof off of the Webster Bank Arena. There he is, our good pal Nick Newell, joining us from beautiful Connecticut. Nick, how are you?
I'm good. I'm just able to relax actually a little bit and eat some good food and get a little thick right now. Thick Newell is is coming for a little bit, and then I'm gonna get back on my grind.
Well, congratulations. It's all well deserved. I'm sure you're feeling a lot better this week than you did last week in terms of the nerves and everything. And so could I ask you, like, when you were here and even in the days leading up to that fight, with everything riding, everyone reminding you that it's a one fight deal, this could be your last chance at a major promotion, you're fighting 10 minutes from your house, how nervous were you? Were you more nervous for this fight than in previous fights?
It's weird because I'm not perfect. I'm just like anyone. Everyone gets nervous. Everyone thinks, what will happen if I lose? What will people say if I lose? But man, I've won so much, and I've lost enough to know that feeling. And I know how much winning means to me. And that's more important than anything. So, leading up to this fight and during this fight camp was actually the first fight camp I've had in a long time where I didn't get, a pretty serious injury in the fight. In the camp. My body felt good. Everything felt good, and there was just a special feeling around the night. And I just had a special feeling going into this that it was going to be an amazing night. So, just having kind of that aura around me and that feeling inside of me really changed my game and allowed me to bring that positive thinking into the cage for the results that I wanted.
So what was the first experience like with Bellator leading up to Saturday? You know, the fight week experience, the way you were treated. How did you feel? How did you feel that they welcomed you?
Yeah, so, I mean, the main thing with me is I kind of get along with everyone. So I'm not much of a diva. I have little things that I like and ask for, and everything I asked for, they gave me. There was clarification on everything. You know, I was wondering what time my fight was. I was like, hey, if these fights go quick, am I going to start then, this time? Like, what's the deal? Like, is it back-to-back? Everything they said happened. Everything was so well organized and so well done, and I really felt like family. I really felt at home at Bellator, and when I stepped in that cage, I was just happy to be a part of a great organization. They didn't treat me like a guy that was on a one fight deal, like a expendable fighter. They treated me like I was one of their guys that was long term. Like I was in the main event. I got really great treatment from them, so I was very happy because they gave me a lot of things I wasn't even asking for.
Like what?
No, just like the treatment. You know, okay. They did a press conference, and I was in the press conference, and they really promoted me, and I got to meet with a bunch of like important people in my town, politicians and stuff like that. So it was a good experience. You know, I felt well promoted. I was on one of the billboards near my house, so it was a cool thing that pretty much anyone that fights really would want, and Bellator made me feel really wanted and made me feel really special.
Not to put down the previous experience in World Series of Fighting, but did this feel bigger than fighting for World Series of Fighting, in your opinion?
I had a great experience with World Series of Fighting too. I mean, I'm very like easy guy to please, easy guy to get along with. So, with them, I definitely had some good experiences with them, but when they were around, there were like a lot of shows in town, and now I feel like Bellator is in a different place, and it's really making its way up to the top, and it's taking a lot of the world's best fighters and making a lot of the world's best fighters and finding them. So for me, it felt special because it was literally in my hometown. I fought in my home state, but this is where I grew up. So this one was a little different.
And what a performance, man. You were on, by the way, what's going on back there? Are people like, are they, it sounds like they're throwing like chess pieces or checkers pieces. What's happening?
Are they? Maybe it's just windy.
Oh, okay. All right. It's clashing, but it's fine. It's fine. You don't hear that?
That's a highway.
Oh, that's a highway. Yes. Okay. That's fine. You looked phenomenal. You were on fire. You just came out very aggressive and picking them apart on your feet. And then, of course, you get the submission in the first round, the arm triangle. I would say that's, you know, that was like vintage Nick Newell, aggressive, showing your stand-up, but then getting a submission. The entire body of work, it didn't last very long, but I would imagine – and I know you could be somewhat critical of yourself, but like I would imagine you have to be pretty damn happy with that performance, right? Did anything leave you unsatisfied?
No, not really. I mean, there's obviously always more things you can show, but if you're going to get the job done, you get the job done. You know,
yeah.
I wasn't hurt, and I got it done early, so I was pretty satisfied with that. My coach told me to kind of bring back a little bit more of the old school Newell and be a little bit more of a dog out there. So. I used to be too much of a dog and just try to make it too much of a fight and less of a chess match. And then I was trying to make it more of a chess match. And we really just kind of worked on finding that balance. And everything I did was calculated, not to do with the game plan, but there's basic principles that my coach wanted me to follow. And I've been working with him for 15 years. So he knows me better than anyone else. And we followed those basic principles and they ended up paying off big time.
So I didn't want to offend you, but I did feel like that was the older Nick Newell, like not the Nick Newell that we've seen in the last couple of fights. And so I'm glad to hear that you kind of felt the same way. It just seemed like you were very focused, very aggressive. You went out there and I was really impressed with your striking. So I was a little bit worried that, you know, maybe the stage or the stakes or things like that would make you take your time. But no, you looked amazing in there. And it seemed like once you slapped on the arm triangle, it looked like there was nowhere for him to go. Did you feel like once you were in that position, even before you crossed over, that it was elementary at that point. He was on the verge of tapping.
Yeah. So when I trapped it, I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to use this and I'm going to slide over to mount. And I had it and it was super tight and he was gurgling right there. Mm-hmm. I knew he was too tight to finish from mount, but I wanted to squeeze it just a little bit to distract him from thinking about his legs. Cause sometimes when you slide over, they catch your leg and that can really ruin the whole thing. So I wanted to make sure that he was distracted up top with my pressure and more worried about that before I slid my legs through. So that's why I was squeezing from mount for a little bit.
Okay.
It was more, I knew he wasn't going to tap that. But it's the, what you said is exactly what my coach told me. He's like, I want the Nick from like 5-6 years ago to come out for this fight. So I told him I promised him that he would.
Amazing. Could you describe the emotions that you felt when he tapped? What was that like?
It was definitely a good feeling because I've been working for this for a long time. You know, Corey is tough. He's definitely a real tough fighter. I mean, he beat two guys on the main card. He's 2-0 in Bellator, and he's not a really intimidating looking guy, but I can say that I'm the first person to tell you don't judge a book by its cover.
Right.
So he was a talented fighter and he had a lot of tricks that I had to be aware of and things I had to do, and I just made sure I did a pressure heavy style and really kind of wore him out because he's a guy and I had to make it less tricky and while staying technical still be smothering.
You know, I was surprised going into the card that they didn't put you on the main card. I understood why. But even after the Javier Ayala situation, I thought for sure they would bump you up. They didn't put you on the main card. Did you care at all, or you just wanted that opportunity, and who cares about where you're fighting?
I don't really care. I'm out there having a good time.
Yeah.
I put on – everyone was really talking about me.
Yep.
My Instagram's obviously Twitter blowing up too. Got a lot more people following me, which is cool. You know, I'm always down for more people paying attention because obviously I work really hard at what I do. So when you have more people celebrating it and congratulating you, it makes you feel real good about yourself. Bellator was awesome to me. Honestly, I had such a great experience with them and such an awesome time with them. I really hope that they have a good plan for me and something moving forward so I can stay with them and keep fighting because they have a lot of guys in the 55-pound division that are very interesting fights for me. The interesting thing that you said is about my striking because I feel like people just assume that I can't strike or that it's somewhere that I'm uncomfortable because I win most of my fights on the ground. But if you notice my last couple of fights, everyone tries to grapple with me. I'm not the one that initiates the grappling exchanges. I'm the one that's winning on his feet, and then they and I do have one less weapon, but I always make sure that my feet are in the right spot and that my footwork is top notch. So I appreciate that people are noticing that because it kind of pisses me off when people make some of their comments sometimes.
I can imagine. I can't imagine the comments that you get, especially after a fight. Cause then it's all, you know, building up. So now the big question is one fight deal. Have you been given a long-term deal? Have you been offered a long-term deal? What were the discussions after the fight?
It's Monday. You know, we'll see. I'm still waiting to hear and hopefully we can come back with something first. But right now I'm decently busy. You know, I have to make up for some lost time with my family. And I'm moving my gym that I own to another town and pretty much building it from scratch. And I've been ignoring it and paying rent because I've been training for this fight. So I gotta get my money situation right and make sure I can move into this new spot. And then I'll think about booking another fight. But obviously my whole experience with Bellator, was amazing. And if they want me to grow with them, I'll grow with them.
Was Scott Coker at the fight? Did you meet him?
I met Scott at the press conference and then, I tried to find him after and I couldn't find him, but he was there. But so many people wanted pictures with me.
Okay.
Which was cool because I always try to take pictures with fans because if you don't appreciate the fans, then you don't have a job, you know?
Right.
The people that work hard at their jobs really bust their ass, and then they spend their money that they can spend on anything to come see you fight. So I really appreciate that, and I kind of got distracted doing that. And then I had to do some other stuff like media and such, so I left without saying it. But I thank Rich Cho, and he was the one that really took a stand, that said, you know what, we'll get you on this card, and I appreciate it, man. They're such nice people.
They are. In a perfect world, when would you like to return, if it all works out with them?
I don't know. It's like you have one idea in your head, and they offer you a fight, and you're like, ask, why not?
Right. So right now you're just open. You're just waiting. You're doing your private stuff, your personal stuff, and they'll come to you.
Yeah, I'm not. I never stop training.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely get lighter when I don't have a fight camp. But I have some of my students that are fighting on CES coming up, so I have to help them get ready. I'm a small camp, so we all help each other even if we don't have a fight. So I'll still be training. It just won't be focused on me. And I'm just going to stay sharp.
Congratulations on the win, Nick. What a great story, man. It really is amazing to see. You are the definition of perseverance. And it's amazing to see, you know, the UFC thing didn't work out. Now here you are, Bellator. They seem to be very excited about you. You get an opportunity 10 minutes from your house. I would be lying if I said I didn't get goosebumps when I saw you win on Saturday, knowing everything that you've been through and had to overcome. So congratulations. It's well deserved. Keep doing your thing. And I hope that they give you that long-term deal. You deserve it. You should get it.
Can I say one more thing?
Please. Go ahead.
When I was a kid, I went to a WWE house show, and Bret Hart gave me his glasses off his head.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Gave me his glasses off his head. Always been my favorite wrestler. The best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
Yes.
Even when everyone was on the Stone Cold train and the Shawn Michaels train, I said, I can't mess with those guys because they're not boys with Bret Hart. I don't like them. I'm not a fan. This is when I was a kid, you know, and hardcore Bret Hart versus everyone, no matter what. Even when he was like Team Canada, I was like, you know what, I still like him, even though I'm United States. You know, Yokozuna was a nightmare for me.
I love it. I was the same way. That was my guy. And now you're on the show. I'm going to ask him about this. See if he remembers it when he's on later.
He was facing Hunter Hearst Helmsley when Hunter Hearst Helmsley was still spraying people with perfume.
Yes.
And it was obviously he doesn't remember it. It's so many people, so long. But I want him to know that he's got a real fan in Nick Newell. And his theme music is on the gym playlist. Only wrestler theme song that's on the playlist.
That is amazing. I will tell him. And also great to see Jim Abbott give you a shout out once again on Saturday. He is one of your biggest fans. It's always great to see him pop up on the timeline when you fight, and especially after a victory. So a great night for you. Enjoy it, my man. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it, and I hope you do get that contract soon.
Thank you.
All right, there he is, Nick Newell. What an amazing story. 16-2 now, won his Bellator debut via first round submission. 11 career wins via submission. Phenomenal stuff. And look at this, Austin Vanderford, Paige Van Zandt. Hey, guys.
How's it going?
Just walked right in.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Please move up to the microphones if you don't mind just bringing up. Thank you for doing this, guys.
Of course, yeah.
The people need to know. These two fine individuals, that's Austin Vanderford, that's Paige Van Zandt, were supposed to fly home yesterday, correct?
Yep.
Yeah, we were.
And you changed your flights.
We stayed.
Stuck around. And he broke his hand in his fight.
Oh,
so.
My.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a...
Really? Okay.
Yeah,
so. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, we'll put it off.
What happened? Tell us.
Sometime in the first round, I think I went body and then head, and he had a hard head, man, and so I cracked my hand. I felt it right away. I was like, that kind of hurt a little bit. I was like, I think something probably.
First time you break it?
The first time this hand. I broke my right hand before, too. But, it's just part of it, you know, and so. Yeah.
You guys know a lot about breaking bones these days.
We do. Gosh, dang it.
A lot about
are we not drinking enough milk or what? Yeah, what do we got going on?
My arm situation.
Oh my gosh.
Is doing good.
Yeah.
Recovering well.
Okay. We will get to your arm in a second, but I want to ask you about the fight.
Yeah.
And first and foremost, 185.
Yeah. Yeah.
You look great at 185.
Thank you.
And initially I was like, 185. I feel like you're going to be too small, but
yeah,
too small.
No, no. I felt great. I mean, I
fix your chair.
Yeah.
Is it bothering you? Is it's on the right side there. There you go. Do you feel too short?
I felt a little too short. I felt, yeah.
You need to be on.
Yeah. I felt a little inferior here. Yeah. So, man, 185 was great. I wrestled at 184 in college. So, you know, I'm used to like that body size. And of course, MMA is a little different and the cutting is definitely different, but, I was cutting a lot of weight for 170. And on top of that, I walk around pretty lean.
Well done, Paige.
Yeah. I enjoy, I like eating good. I like eating clean. I love staying in shape. I love working out. And so, I didn't really have like a ton of weight to play around with, but so cutting like 35 pounds for me was, you know, kind of a big deal.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Was he more pleasant, Paige, to be around, not cutting to 170?
Oh my gosh. So much better to be around. Well, the hard thing is because he does cut so much weight that during the last bit of it, he's genuinely close to dying. Like
oh, really?
It is an insane amount of weight. We went and finally did his like body fat testing and at 203, when he was like 203 pounds, he was 7% body fat.
Oh wow.
So to get all the way down to 170, it was just, it's just too much, honestly.
It's a little
and
bit,
like, but even though we know he might be short for the division sometimes, but like your last few opponents you fought were all like 6'4".
Some tall guys.
Six, like super tall.
Yeah.
You're just thick and dense. I don't think the like he'll never be out muscled.
Okay.
I don't think will ever be an issue.
Yeah. Paulo Costa and those guys are the outliers bit, but yeah.
We have some time before we have to worry about those.
We got a little time. Yeah.
What is it like for you to be in his corner watching these fights?
Terrifying. It's really stressful.
Just wanted
and
to cry
really
after.
Scary. Afterwards, it's like I was really excited for him, but like I wanted to just like cry and like go hide in the corner because it was like finally over.
Yeah.
And like the emotional stress behind just the whole process. Like he had six opponents pull out. He had like the last minute cutting his face open right before the fight. It was like just one. This camp was really stressful. So this one, it feels good though. Like it makes me feel really accomplished because obviously we've had a successful run with me in his corner. So I feel like we're doing well. And
yeah, what's the record now with you in his corner?
I think I've been to all of his pro fights except for one.
Yeah, okay. She's been to all, so.
Wow.
Yeah, we're doing good.
Yep.
And I saw on the YouTube page, and we'll get to that also in a second, the actual premise behind it, but I saw the cut when you got cut.
Yeah.
So it's right over there. I see.
It is. Star. And I didn't really, you know, I didn't care too much to document or talk about it and stuff. But cause it's just part of it, man.
Yeah.
You know, we get cut a lot. My dad, he's got some big old eyebrows, and so
I respect that.
It's you been have them too.
Yes. There we go. And so, you know, I got the bones here that for whatever reason or not like to get cut open. So I had gotten it done and we contemplated like, well, should we go get stitches? Should we not? It was 12 days out and we're like, no, we're just going to super glue it. And hope for it. Everything was good. The healing was going great. It was probably a blessing in disguise at first because it was like, all right, now my hard training's done and we're just going to focus on getting ready for a fight. Cause I like to spar like that last Saturday a week before and just kind of go downhill from there. So kind of took me out of that, which, you know, I wasn't quite used to, but it ended up being okay. But like the day before weigh-ins, we were drilling a little bit and I shot a double. I think we're working some clinch stuff. I shot a double and I hit my coach's, I think maybe hip bone or his hand or whatever. And it cut it back open.
Oh no.
More time, like 2 days before the fight. So then the rest of the fight week, it was like, or like the last 2 days, it was just me trying to like glue his eye shut and
working on the makeup
technique.
Trying
to like cover it with makeup because we knew the commission here wouldn't want him to like, might not clear him with that cut over his eye. So
it was just in an unfortunate spot.
Unfortunate spot.
Did they notice?
No.
No,
and I was so nervous too. So I'm doing all my medical checks after weigh-ins, and he's having me close my eyes and touch his finger, touch my nose, And I'm so nervous about it that the first like time I go touch his finger and I think I like touch over here or whatever. It's like, hey, you want to do that one over again?
Yeah, that's not your nose.
I was just nervous. I was like, gosh, I hope he's not paying attention to my eye, you know, all these things. So. But it worked out. It turned out okay.
It certainly did. Yeah, you guys, did you post that footage after the fight?
Posted it after the fight.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Very smart.
Well, and then the whole fight week, I was like getting, like, I was trying to fill his eyebrows in and make him look like darker, like cover it, whatever I could to cover it.
Brushing my eyebrows. So it all worked out, though.
And so now overall, that's 2-0 in Bellator, correct?
Yep.
And it seems like they're happy with you. They seem to be behind you. Are you happy there?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm so happy.
Okay.
They're just everything that goes into it and everything, you know, like you said, they seem happy and,
yeah.
And all this. And so all I want is just the opportunity and the stage to, you know, prove that I do belong with all these guys and with the best in the world. And I hope to work my way up and get the chance, you know, to fight for a world title and do all that. So
you won via doctor stoppage. Did you feel like, I'm always curious how a fighter feels about a doctor stoppage, like due to a cut. Like, feel like it was?
Yeah, this is funny because I was telling her before, I was like, man, it kind of like takes like some of the joy away because it like surprised me, you know, and it's cool to, of course, the finish is always awesome, but I like the ref pulling me off
sure,
somebody.
Sure, sure.
And
it's a little anticlimactic, right?
You're like, it really is, yeah. And I was telling her, so it was after the second round or whatever. And so I'm still thinking like, all right, we're going to go back out and fight. But then I hear someone say, no, I think the fight's over, but I don't believe them too. And I'm like, well, maybe they're going to change their mind. Maybe the fight's not over. I see like all these people there.
It wasn't like definitive.
Sure.
There was no real definitive, like, hey, fight's over. Someone like waving their hands, calling it off. And
right.
So then I'm outside. I didn't get to go in the cage. So then I'm like still telling him, all right, this is what you got to do to finish the fight. Like, and like, I'm talking him through it. And then he figured out the fight was over and was like, babe, the fight's over. And I was like, well, no, you have another round. You need to like work hard. There's one more round.
She had the coaching hat on still. She's like yelling at me, no, you got to do this. I'm like, babe, the fight is over. She's like, no, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, babe, the fight is over. And I kissed her, I think, through the cage.
Oh, that's great.
And it was all good. So
that's amazing that you guys get to experience this. Was there ever any talk before you decided to like corner each other and stuff? Like, we're not going to do this. You're just going to sit off to the side. Cause it could be stressful, right?
Yeah, for sure.
It could be very stressful, I'm sure. In the build up, was there ever any talk of separating and not cornering each other?
I think so.
Okay.
I think right from the get go, I mean, maybe didn't corner your our first fight when we were dating.
You did. Yeah. It was the Washington, the Phoenix.
If he ever gets a corner, like when he can ever only have two corners instead of three.
Okay.
If there's ever like a weird scenario like that, I would definitely step out.
The contender series.
Right. Yeah. He could only have the two. So I like separated myself it just depends. And I think I'll always have him in my corner. One, cause he has like a national champion wrestling background.
Right.
So it's like, and he coaches our wrestling team. So it's like, I get to have like my wrestling coach in the corner.
Right.
And then beyond that, it's just, you know, the emotional support. Somebody who watches me train every single day. He's at every sparring session, goes home with me, tells me exactly like how practice went, like what I need to work on. It's like you have a coach with you 24/7, and having somebody like that in your corner is awesome.
Yeah, there's a calming factor too, you know, in the back. I feel like the most nerve-wracking part of the whole experience is the 2 hours that you're just waiting in the back, and you're looking at everyone else, and they're stretching out, and then there's guys laying down, and then you say, should I be stretching? Like, what should I be doing right now? And to have her in the back too with me is, you know, there's a calming factor and we can talk and all that. So.
And I think if we weren't in each other's corner the whole time, I would be texting him.
Driving,
like,
right.
Hey, like fight's almost up. Like, I don't know, just texting the whole time. It's like you're being separated from your significant other. You're going to think about them the entire time. So.
And I think now would be harder than if we would have just started off our relationship, not covering each other. I think taking one away now would be like, this is too weird.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's not. So
I was waiting for someone to call you out and use your marriage as a reason for the call out. And there's Saba Homasi who did it. And he did it, right before your fight, right?
Yeah.
I think like the fight before.
Like the fight before.
Yeah. So it was like perfect timing for him. Did you hear that before you went out?
I was so completely caught off guard. So I'll tell you the whole story with it. So, So John McCarthy's interviewing me afterwards and talking about this, and I had never heard of this guy.
You didn't hear the call out? Nothing.
I heard nothing. Okay.
Seen this guy all weekend or whatever. They had already pulled us into the tunnel because he's the next fight up. Once you're in the tunnel, there's like the staging area for the next fight. And they were going so fast, they had people like lined up. We couldn't hear anything that was happening back there.
So we were like, wait a second.
Well, and I'm in my zone. You know, I'm thinking about everything that I've got to go out and do. And the funny thing about it too is like before I even went out, we had passed each other and he was like, hey, good luck in your fight or something. And so I was like, man, that guy's a really nice guy. And then I see that or whatever, I'm like, man, that guy's an idiot. And, he's seen me all weekend. Why hasn't he said something to me all weekend? You know, I understand the game and all that. And he was just letting it build up or do whatever. But I had never heard of him before, that. And so then afterwards, I'm asked my manager's like, what's that guy? Who is that guy or whatever? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I didn't even think about, the fights before either. I was like, I didn't even think anyone around my weight class was fighting before me. And so,
have you heard it since what he said?
Yeah, we've heard it since.
Okay. And what do you make of it?
I want to make steps forward and not steps back, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So for me, I think a step forward would be someone like in the top 10 or something.
Okay. So you want top 10. You feel like he's a step back.
I do. Yeah. Okay. I feel like I've proved myself. You know, I've got 2 fights, 2 finishes, and, you know, I think I should be making like that next jump up.
Does it piss you off that someone uses your marriage as a way to call you out?
No, man. I know you hear it all, right? This. Yeah. I knew what I signed up for, and you know, when we got married, and I've stuck behind it the whole time that, you know, it's pretty hard to really ruffle my feathers and get me upset about.
Does it bother you, Paige?
No, and I think it's funny. I mean, I understand why people call me out because I will get it the majority of my career. Because right now, I feel like they just know if they fight me, there's going to be people watching.
Sure.
You're going to get the attention. It's a smart thing to do is to call someone out who has eyes on them because in turn you are going to get those. You know, now he's getting it, and there's no way for me to be frustrated or upset because people are calling me out based on my success. Okay. And they're not calling me out based on like a troubled past or anything negative to go on in my life. It's just based on I've been extremely successful, and now in turn he's getting it as well. And, you know, he can't really be like, oh no, my wife's really successful. Like, that's so bad.
Yeah, it's hard. And no disrespect to him too. I mean, he's obviously gotten to where he's at because he must have talent or whatever in his own right. But, you know, at this point in my career, I do feel like that's just a step back, or it's just on the same level as where I'm at, where I want to be moving forward.
So this is my question, because you've been on the show a couple of times, and I always joke about the Mr. Van Zandt thing, and I get crap for it. Every time I tweet about it,
I know.
I get crap. But now I'm starting to wonder, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I saw your Instagram where you said like, know his name, you know, it said like Paige Van Zandt's husband. Have you guys changed your stance on this? Do you not like the Mr. Van Zandt thing anymore? Because I feel like now it bothers you.
It's fine for me. Okay. I think it's funny, but
I think it's funny.
You don't like it.
Because
I noticed also you changed your name on Instagram.
I did change my name on Instagram. Well, legally, I did change my name. We are the Vanderfords.
Okay.
And so I know professionally I'll be recognized as Paige Van Zandt. And we're, you know, building our brand as a successful couple. And I think being a power couple, there's so much. It's a great dynamic. There's power behind it. We're both extremely successful in our own right. But I just don't want – I think I get more – I mean, I do think it's funny. But I get more upset about it when people use it in a negative way, like, you know, trying to say that he's only successful because of my career,
which is
absolutely not true. I mean, if you look at his fights, I don't have 6 finishes. He has 6 finishes, a national champion, wrestling background. You know, we've had the exact same amount of fights. I just happen to have gotten in the UFC at a young age.
I just want to be clear. I'm not trying to throw shade. I'm just.
We know you're not. Okay, we know.
I think it's hilarious. Every time they're like, "How dare you call him that?" Yeah. I'm like, I actually did ask his permission.
Feel bad for you.
No, I think it's funny.
No. I feel bad for you.
Well, and that was the thing. Like even going on the Contender Series, like having Team Alpha Male saying all that stuff about him, like somewhere I came from, and that was. I was like, gosh, like there's no reason to be so negative about it. And I hope that I'm not the reason he didn't get in the UFC. Like part of me is like,
why would that even be?
I don't know. Maybe they don't I don't know. So there's, I don't know. I always just think through every scenario.
If anything, I would think that they would want to have him because
I would think so.
It would
too.
Go the opposite way.
I was thinking because of his performance on the Contender Series, he looked amazing. Of course, gotten dropped, awesome knocked down. Got
yeah, it was a great
mounted,
fight.
Mounted and then fought out of it. Was able to get the finish in the second round, and so I just thought it was like the perfect setup to get a contract. But we're so happy with where he's at now. Bellator has been amazing for his career, for everything, and you know, I just think through those. Things being a textbook overthinker.
You guys read the comments a lot? Because I do read sometimes and it's like, man, the comments are horrible. It's like that.
Oh,
that,
they're
that
you awful. Get, that,
you know, you some crazy basically stuff. What Saba said, but it's like times 10.
Yeah.
Thinking that you have no merit whatsoever and you have no reason to be here, that you're riding her coattails. Yeah. Do you read that and get mad or do you just completely ignore it?
I mean, how can I can't get mad at this point. Like, okay. I have.
Did you used to? Like, did you have to teach yourself there not
was
to get mad?
There was a time briefly when we first, you know, start our relationship together and when I was brand new. I mean, I think I was only 2-0 or whatever when we started dating and all that. And, at first it kind of did. It was like, you know, I did have to learn a little bit, but it was a very short time, you know, and so.
And I think, you know, things that I had to learn is it doesn't matter how successful I am. I will always be looked at. Because of, like, there are certain stigmas that just kind of stick with you, whether you like it or not. And I think that my looks will always be something that people talk about before my skill. And, you know, with us as a couple, I think no matter how successful he is, I mean, I'm always going to be in the picture. Mm-hmm. I was in the UFC first. I was doing these things. But the more successful we are as a couple, I think people will see, like, we're just a power couple doing, like, awesome stuff.
Okay. Yes. Yep. Yes. Okay, so now let's talk about the arm.
Yes.
How is it feeling?
Arm feels great, actually.
Oh, look at that scar.
It's a nasty scar. Yeah. Every surgery, it just keeps getting longer.
Oh, my God.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
So I got cleared to start training the week before his fight. Yep. So I got cleared about a week ago.
Oh, wow.
And
100% cleared? No kind of, restrictions?
No.
She's, she's at 80% from that point, which that was a week ago, and it's really progressing fairly fast. Okay. So
I do want to take my time to, like, ease into training. I definitely don't want to go and, like, hurt myself right away again.
Right.
I think I technically wasn't 100% cleared in my last fight, and it worked out well because I was able to get the win. But, of course, I re-broke my arm the very next week sparring.
Right.
So I'm going to ease into this. I start conditioning tomorrow, and I'm supposed to only lift, like, the doctor's terms is like 15 pounds for the first month, and then I can ideally start sparring in a month.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. So is this year probably pushing it for a return?
No.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
You want to return this year?
For sure I'm going to fight this year.
Oh, really? Okay.
Once I start sparring, I think I want to, like, sign a fight contract and be, like, 6 weeks out.
Did I read correctly that you only have one fight left on your deal?
Yes, I do.
I'm
going to fight it out.
Did they try to re-sign you?
I know there was some sort of communication between my management team and somebody within the UFC about negotiating. And I think both my managers and I just kind of knew that we wanted to fight the contract out. I think even before we knew I only had one fight left, it's just been... it caught me off guard that I only had one fight left. I thought they would have re-asked me to renegotiate when I had two fights left. I just heard, you know, sometimes that's the case. But this deal, because I've been injured so many times and then been on Dancing with the Stars, I signed this deal with like Lorenzo.
Oh my gosh.
He's the one who put my deal together. So it was like Lorenzo and, Sean Shelby right before I fought Rose. So this was like a really old deal. It just kind of came out of nowhere, but. Knowing it's my last fight, I do want to go out with like a statement. I want to come off of two wins. I want to really show what I'm worth. And, you know, being young, I've, you know, been fortunate enough, I guess, with my injuries, I'm going to be able to extend my MMA career for a really long time. A lot of people, after being in the UFC for almost 6 years, are towards the end-ish of their career. I feel like I have so much longer and I'm only, you know, 25 years old. I have a really long MMA career left and I really want to prove what I'm worth and what my value is. I do think one more fight is what it's going to take.
Okay. So the natural question would be like, do you want to end up where your husband is? Is that why you're fighting?
That's not really a thought right now. Okay. I don't know. I think more than anything, of course I know I'm going to have,
are you promotion. Happy with the UFC?
I'm happy where I am. Okay. I am. But I do think that my value is significantly higher than what I am currently earning that.
Yes.
It's yes. like professional way to
You want a
that.
Pay raise.
I do want to, I want okay. a significant pay raise, to be completely honest.
Yes, I appreciate that.
And not transparent. Yeah, I do think that my value is really low. I look at like, you know, it's, I think, okay, my manager said I do need to start talking highly,
talk away.
Highly about myself and standing up for myself.
Yes.
So
yes.
when, you know, when I fought Michelle Waterson,
yeah.
we had some of the highest views on Fox in like years and years and years. We set the record. We blew everyone out and we had like amazing views when we were on Fox. And
I'm just going to put this light. Yeah. So it's not, there you go. Please. You're vibing right now. I don't want to interrupt.
Okay. Okay. So,
killed it on Fox.
Killed it on Fox yes. with that. I feel like coming off of Dancing with the Stars with the fan base I've been able to build up, doing my book tour, and I've just been extremely accomplished outside of the UFC
sure,
as well
sure.
as in the UFC. And I see these other stars that cross over from other organizations. Take CM Punk. I don't think I have quite the star. I don't know the star value CM Punk does, just different industries.
Sure.
He has a huge fan base where he comes from. But, who's the other football player?
Greg Hardy.
Greg Hardy. Yes. Him coming over from football. Yeah. All these other stars and what the UFC values them at. And I'm not saying that they're devaluing me now because this is an extremely old contract, but I do know how much money I make compared in comparison to them. And I do want to show the UFC, like I'm so much more than just a star outside of fighting. Like I'm a star in the UFC as well. Like yeah. I am really talented. I've been working hard. I've just had a string of unfortunate luck with my arm. And I think I need to like put in perspective all the things that I have done. You know, I've had, 5 wins in the UFC, 4 finishes, 2 arm bars, 1 knockout, and just an awesome record. I've been the main event twice, and I think someone with those accolades should be paid more.
Yes. Well done.
Thank you.
What do you think of that, Austin? That was good, right?
It's
hard for me to like really talk highly of myself. I know. I need to stand up for myself more.
It's hard, and that's the thing is she's kind of just sat back and let things go and whatnot. And that's where she was getting at with our managers. And that's how we feel. And you know, it's a sport, but obviously this is our profession and work. And you know, we need to be getting what.
Sure.
Well, you know, and the hard thing for me to put in perspective is with endorsements, like I make way more money sitting at home.
Really?
Posting pictures on Instagram than I do fighting.
Really?
With endorsement deals and everything I pull in from social media, I mean, I would actually be at a loss just taking a fight and focusing.
Wow.
If I were to stop everything I do outside of fighting and just fight, I would be at a loss.
Really?
Financially.
By a
long shot. So.
Yeah. Wow.
It's just, you know, with TV endorsements, with all the things I do and, coming off of Sports Illustrated, it's like, you know what, if I'm going to keep breaking my arm, if I'm going to keep bleeding and sacrificing for this sport, I think it's all fighters and all female fighters need to be recognized. And I was able to sit down with Adidas and do a stadium interview with other successful female fighters. And, you know, one thing I did mention is when I did my contract negotiation for the last time, you know, the talk was, I can't pay you more than a female champion. It's like, okay, but why are you comparing me to just women?
Yeah.
All of us should be getting paid more in general, and especially the women, and then especially based on your star power.
Yeah. That's who said that?
No comment.
Okay. Interesting. That is interesting. As you said, that was a long time ago.
It was a long
maybe
time
like
ago.
three or 4 years ago, right?
Yeah, it wasn't the Fertittas at all. But it's like someone you know, we shouldn't be based on I can't pay you more than a female champion. Well, why is she getting so much less than the male champion?
Absolutely. And she's just like champion, period.
She's just champion, period. Yeah. It shouldn't be just based on gender.
Right.
Still, you know, it's 2019 or at that time, 2016. Okay.
But you still like fighting, though, right?
I love fighting.
Like, even though the politics, the business,
there
all that
is
stuff.
A lot of politics. Oh, really stressful. It's like been agonizing having to sit outside of the cage or sit on the mats. Like, going and watching him practice, I come home and just cry in the car home. It's like I get to watch him spar and be like happy for him. But like, and I don't want, it doesn't, it's not that it creates like a sense of jealousy between us, but it's.
That's what I was wondering about. Like, do you feel guilty?
No, but we had a talk about this not very long ago is like, you know, trying to see like what have been the upsides of this and whatnot. And I think one thing that it has really done is made her realize how much she loves fighting and you know, maybe sparked, some new motivation or whatever. But I can say firsthand, she would give all the outside stuff up, the TV stuff up, just to be a fighter. Mm-hmm. And it's,
not to keep hurting myself.
Yeah. You don't see that. And it's hard. And most people don't recognize that with her and whatnot. But I can say firsthand, I mean, you know, 7 days a week, she's upset about not being able to train 4 or 5 days of those week, you know, of the week. I think being laid off like this has really made her realize that. And it has been really hard for sure.
Yeah. I think, and that was like a lot of questions I do get is, when are you going to be done? Because I am having the success outside of the cage.
Done as in retire?
Done as like retired fighting. And then this has really made me think like, yes, I do like financially am supported through other endorsements, but I would give all of it up just to be able to fight full time. I mean, I am lucky enough that during my layoff, I try to stay extremely busy. I've been commentating. We're going on a mission trip next month. We're doing as much as we can to keep my mind preoccupied because, gosh, having fighting taken away from me for so long has been awful. It's been awful. And even to have that last win, like I felt like it was just like a tease. Like I was like, I had my foot in the water. I got to fight one time and then have it taken away from me again and to go from injury to injury to injury. I think it has really sparked. Like it reminded me how much I love this.
Where are you guys going on the mission trip?
Cambodia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you doing there?
We are teaching girls self-defense.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. So, yeah, we got that on the docket coming up.
And
we got a lot of things coming up.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like you guys are trying. Is that annoying you?
Well, I just keep messing with it.
I think we just need to tighten it up. Bring a little, and the other one.
See the other one there? Is it tight?
Yeah. No. This way. This way.
Okay. We'll figure it out.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I noticed. So you did the YouTube channel. Do you guys want to be the Mr. and Ms. of UFC? You know that show on USA? Are you guys trying to do something here?
I don't know.
Who does that?
The Miz and, you know, the WWE guy. You know, the
Miz?
Yeah, they have a show on USA, which apparently kills it over there. Is that what we're trying to do?
We would love that.
Okay.
I think it's just cool to document our lives, like, behind the scenes. Is like, you can only put so much stuff on Instagram.
Yeah.
And you only put, like, the prettiest, best, most, you know, the exciting things and the good stuff that's happening in life. And I feel like through the YouTube channel, we can show actually everything that we do and the heartache, the good, the bad, and it's just been really fun for us, actually.
Yeah, I think more than anything, we just enjoy doing it. It's kind of like a hobby in a way. And we're just trying to just do it. And for us, if something bigger comes from it, awesome. And if not, you know, we're just going to continue to do what we do with it and have fun.
And show our lives. And
what's the address again?
Right now, youtube.com/PageVanZant.
Oh, no.
Come on.
We don't know how to change it.
Oh, you don't?
But, yeah, we're working on that.
Vanderforts or the...
Not
technically savvy. Okay.
No, right, and so. We have titled it, though.
Oh, yeah, what's the title?
Tough Love, right?
Yeah, Tough Love.
Wow, you guys already have, a name.
We do have a name.
Oh, I feel like a channel. We should get this on ESPN Plus or something.
We should. And it's cool because it's like, you know, it is an interesting dynamic, you know, the life of a professional fighting married couple.
Sure.
Like, following each other, cornering each other, the stress, like, what we have to put up with to get each other to the fights. And, you know, there's not a lot of us.
No, there's not. There's like the De La Rosas who are out there.
Yep, and then Amanda Nunes and
Nunes and Nina,
and then Tisha. You know, just to be able to have like professional fighting couples, I think it's cool to like show the stress behind it and the love and like everything we go through. It's fun.
Yeah.
By the way, is that a new tattoo on your neck?
It's but I'm gonna get it. I've got a GoFundMe to get it removed. I guess.
Is that true?
No.
Oh. They're genuinely. Someone made a GoFundMe account
to get it removed.
Get his tattoo removed.
Why? I mean, it looks.
Some people just don't. You know, I'm a tattoo guy. My dad had tattoos growing up, and I love tattoos. And I got this right after. I usually get a new tattoo after each fight. So
okay,
this one was. After
did you have nothing there? Did you have something on the side?
I had some stuff on the side, and then on the back.
And on the back.
Yeah,
but it is new.
It is new. Relatively, within the last 6 months. Yeah.
How much does that hurt?
They all hurt, honestly.
Like on your Adam's apple?
That wasn't the worst part about it. The funny thing, too, is so I was trying to test it. I was like, gosh, so I would take our electric toothbrush and I put it on my Adam's apple. I was like, all right, you know, this is going to be kind of the same sensation. And it's like, yeah, it's not really that bad. The back of my neck, honestly, hurt more than the front.
So, like, now when you get a tattoo like that, like, it's there, right?
Yeah.
You ask for permission? How does this work? It's like when you did. Okay.
Yes, he does.
You didn't want to say, but you said yes right away.
Well, I mean, of course, I would always tell him, like, there's been tattoos where I told him, I'm like, that's ugly. You're not going to put it on your body. Yeah, not
getting it. Okay.
And I was not sold on the eyeball. It's cool, though. I made sure it was green because I have green eyes.
Okay.
Which that was like subliminal. He did not know that.
Yeah.
What does it represent?
Like the eye of the storm, you know, the calm in the eye of it. And then, so.
Is she the eye? Is that her eye?
Am I the eye of the storm?
Trick question.
You should have said yes.
You should have said yes. But he has, this is supposed to represent me. It's a cute little blonde box.
Okay. Yeah. That's after you met, right? You got that one?
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm a tattoo guy, though. So.
Okay.
The funniest thing, though, is when we first started dating, my mom, like, met him. She's like, hilarious. Yeah. So, obviously, the whole world knows my dating track record. So, when I started dating him, my mom was like, awesome. Like, he's a clean-cut guy. He doesn't have very many tattoos. Like, and my parents were, like, so happy he didn't have a neck tattoo. And
then what happened?
And then I got,
Are they mad? What did they say?
Well, we're married now, so it doesn't matter. Right?
It's actually your 1 year anniversary coming up.
It's coming up.
Almost in a month.
Wait a second. Yeah. Is it, and I'm a really weirdo when it comes to, I'll tell you why I remember the date, but is it September 28th?
29th. So that was really good.
Rory Musasi.
Yes.
Right? That's how I remember everything in life. Based on fights. Yes.
That is so funny. Yep. Yes. September 29th.
Wow. Yeah. Anything planned?
No. We're going to have a staycation, I think.
Yeah.
There's a Jew in-house jiu-jitsu tournament on our anniversary, so we'll probably do that.
Okay. Wow. Very romantic.
Yeah. And, we're excited.
We froze
the cake and all that. And then I think we got like a fancy bottle of champagne for
that we got as a gift from the wedding that we just never drank.
So we're gonna open that.
Okay. Yeah. So technically, are you still newlyweds?
That's what I've always said, and so I bring it up like, "Hey, we're still newlyweds.
Like, we are not newlyweds. So, only because you use it as a defense mechanism when I say I want to go on a honeymoon.
Oh, you still haven't gone?
We haven't gone on a honeymoon.
But you've been around the world.
We've been around the world,
and that's what I say. Yes. So, babe, we go. Our life is
people
a
have paid for you to go around the world.
Yes.
Well, so I think that until you reach the 1 year anniversary, you're still newlywed. That's
good. Yes.
And so with that in mind, I wanted to play the newlywed game with you guys.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
yes. We were supposed to play this at our wedding.
Yeah, here we go. Wow. Oh, this is exciting.
I'm somewhat nervous about this. So.
I practiced.
You practiced? You didn't even know that we were doing this.
Well, no, because I wanted to be on the new, TV show.
Oh, the
new
one.
TV game.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. Are you excited about this?
This is just cool.
I am, but like I said, I'm a little nervous.
Okay. So, newlywed game. For those that don't know, this is the way I'm going to do it. I'm going to ask you guys the same question about each other, and we have to know like who knows.
Okay.
Yeah, you get what I'm saying?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. All right. Oh, we even have music. You guys can't hear that right now, but we've got music playing now. So the game show music. Okay. What was the date that you first met? I remember this story. You guys were at a fight, right? And I think Chael Sonnen played a part in this, right?
No. Yeah, but I don't know.
Wait,
she just
changed her answer.
No.
Oh, you've met before.
Well, technically, she was at my professional debut. But
did you actually meet?
No, we didn't.
I did meet his ex-girlfriend.
Oh, wow. What was that like?
She took a picture with me.
Really? She asked you for a picture?
I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. Did you know that?
He told me that afterwards.
Yeah. Let's see.
Okay.
I feel like we're uncovering all kinds of fun stuff here.
This isn't right?
Yeah.
I don't have the right answer.
Oh, my God. Neither of you know the date you first met?
No, because it was that picture was our first technical.
Well, I saw on your Instagram you were sitting together.
And I posted the date on it. And now I forgot what it is.
This was like last week.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's see if you get this.
Okay, turn them around.
So I want to see.
July 17th?
Oh, okay.
August 15th. Uh-oh.
Well,
I don't know the answer because I wasn't there when you met.
August 15th.
I don't think it was the 15th. I think it was the 13th that we were, like, technically dating.
Well, we're 0 for 1.
Okay, you're 0 for 1.
We're 0 for 1.
Wow. I wonder, what year? Do you even know the same year? Would you say the same year?
2017.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
That's easy. That summer of 2017.
Yeah. Okay. What was the first meal you shared together? What did you guys have?
I remember this.
Okay. All right.
Okay. There's two answers. Okay. I know this. Wait. I'm really gonna think. I feel like I've got a pretty good memory.
Okay.
Okay. Is it the first we went out to eat? The first time we went out.
Is it first time we went out or the first thing we ever ate around?
First thing you ever ate together.
Ate around each other?
Yeah.
Okay. I have it.
Uh-oh. Okay, I feel like the pressure is on. I feel like you're not on the same page again. Pardon the pun. Okay. Wait. You keep erasing your answer. Are you looking at his board, by the way?
It looks like that.
You know Austin.
I know.
Okay. We're letting her finish up. Right. Okay, turn them over. What do you say? Peas? Snap peas. Wow.
From her garden. Yeah, she brought them to training.
Yes, I grew them myself, and I was eating peas, and one of the little beans, like, popped out of my mouth and went across the
first
table.
First time I ever met her.
And he
wow.
ate it.
Wow.
He ate my peas.
That was impressive that you both knew that. Okay.
That was the first time that we really met each other, so yes. We should have remembered that. Whatever day.
When you ate my
it was at practice. That okay. Training session.
What were the circumstances surrounding this, and who said I love you first?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, okay.
Okay, they both seem to know. They seem very confident in this particular regard. Who said I love you first, and why? They're writing away. I like this. This is a lot of fun. We should do this with all our guests.
This is really fun. Ready.
Okay. Austin's still writing. He's writing a whole story. I like this.
I don't know that I need to add this last part. But,
okay. Turn it around. Paige says, me on our way to a fishing trip. Yeah, Austin says, on our way to go fish. I did. She'll take credit. Wow.
That's a joke. That was like right on top. Okay, so I was the one who said
it. No, we were in the back of a van on our way to like a fishing trip, and it was like first thing in the morning.
Okay.
And we were like, you know, snuggling, and he goes like, oh, I think I'm falling in love with you. And I said, I know I'm in love with you.
Oh, so you went up to him.
I went, yeah.
Okay. You remember the circumstances. How far into the first meeting was this? Okay.
Days or
not. No, it was pretty quick.
I mean, we got married,
like 2 years.
No, only like a year.
A year after we started dating.
We got engaged like 6 months.
Okay.
He moved in 2 weeks after we started met. Two weeks.
Jeez Louise. Wow.
I had been commuting like 5 hours to get to Portland to train.
Okay.
And his thing was like, oh, I'm going to have to get an apartment and I can either like go get an apartment and get a job to pay for the apartment or you can just move in.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Well, then at the 6 month mark, it was like, hey, you're either marrying me or
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. I was so, you know, if you're going to be living with me, we're getting married.
We're getting married or you're moving out. I was like, all right.
Okay. I hope this one isn't too personal, but I'll ask anyway. How many kids do you guys want to have?
Okay.
All right. It wasn't too personal.
No. Talk about this.
Okay. All right. All right.
Wait.
I figured it was just going to be a number, but Austin's giving an explanation. This is going to be an interesting one. Someone says 4 and the other person says 2.
No, you know,
you're writing a lot there, Austin. Yeah. Okay, here we go. Yeah. Turn it around. 2 or 3, 2 kids, but adopt one, not of the two.
I meant like not of these two, but adopt
a third.
We're going to adopt.
So, yeah,
a third.
Okay.
So we kind of decided
I should have just wrote.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
So you will adopt.
Yeah. We definitely decided we're going to. We haven't decided 2 or 3, but I know we want like a boy and a girl. So whichever one we have first, we're going to adopt the other.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I feel like you're on the same page on that one.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. All right. What were the circumstances surrounding your first fight? Your first major fight?
First major?
Yeah. Did you guys ever have a fight? Like an argument?
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh,
like
we
an
were
argument.
Thinking of a major.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Kind of first
argument.
Did you have argument?
Oh, man.
Is it possible you never argue?
No, we argue.
Okay.
Hey, we're both professional fighters here. Yeah. Okay, we got tempers, but we keep everything pretty. I think I'm just going to write one down.
So there isn't one that sticks out? Because usually like the first one is... No.
No, that sticks out. For me, there isn't one that sticks out.
Okay. Paige this thought of one.
Okay, I'm just, okay. Mine is, I don't travel enough with her. I feel like our first big one, she had went on a USO tour trip and I didn't go with her. And, cause I thought I was going to be fighting like sometime in the near future. And I think I didn't end up fighting for a couple months after.
But, that was really sad.
But she was upset.
Okay. Yeah. All right. What did you say, Paige?
I don't want to show mine.
Oh, why?
Marry me.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Wow. But, okay, yeah.
That led to an argument.
I came back from the USO tour.
Oh, so it's all about the same.
It was all the same.
It is all the same.
I wanted him to go with me and then he did it. And then I was like, oh, well, you know, we're going to be together. You need to travel with me and support me and blah, blah, blah. And then somehow that led to like you're marrying me.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember the whole thing. I can even give you, we were in the hot tub fighting.
Yes, so. That is
wow.
So true.
Yeah. Well done. And then is that why you married her? Is that why you
well, that's not the only reason. Okay.
Well, this is funny though. So because he had and there was all these like, you know, girls overthink things. So he was on the phone with his dad and his dad lent him money or something. And then his dad like it was on speakerphone and so his dad's like, "Oh, so when are you going to pay me back?" And I was like, oh, he borrowed money from his dad to buy me to a ring.
So then, and I
which
think
was
another,
not true. Yeah, it was from something else.
Yeah. So, and it all kind of worked out. It all just kind of happened like completely random.
Okay.
Her parents weren't in town. And so for me, I felt horrible. I was like, I got to ask your dad's permission. I got to ask your family.
But our family doesn't live anywhere near.
Yeah. So then I had to call on the phone and because I wasn't going to do it until I talked to them and, and all that. And so I call and I'm so nervous. I'm shaking and I'm talking to her. I was like, you know, I really don't want to do this on the phone, but I have no choice right now. I'm going to ask your daughter to marry me and all that. And
it all worked out.
It all worked out.
Okay. So this is a two-parter. Who is Austin's favorite female fighter? Not you, of course. That he likes to watch.
Favorite female fighter. This is hard. And I'm a big fan. We watch like every single event. We go to all the locals.
Paige seems to know.
She knows. This is a hard one for me. I honestly, because I feel... Not that I'm going to get in trouble for anything.
He's going to feel like he's getting in trouble.
Just
write one down.
Really
I think
put me on the spot.
Write one down.
That's kind of why I asked it.
Yeah, write it down.
Do you think he knows someone and is not saying it on purpose?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't, actually. No. But.
No, gosh. I guess if I'm going to have to.
I'm really curious if I got it right.
Okay.
But I think I know.
I hope I spelled it right.
All right, here we go.
Ready?
Shevchenko? Oh, Cyborg.
Yeah, that's
Shevchenko, same weight class. Okay, now Paige's favorite male fighter.
Babe, that is interesting. Same weight class.
Same weight class. I could not just think
they
of one.
They could fight one day. Who are you going to root for?
You guys put me on the spot. I was put on the spot here and I had no idea what to say.
He's my favorite male fighter.
I think I might. Yeah, this is...
I know.
Do you? Okay. Yours is long.
All right. Okay. Here we go.
Ready?
Chael Sonnen, good answer. Great answer.
I said Mike Perry.
That's a good one, too.
Interesting.
Yeah,
Mike
we
Perry.
Do really like the Perrys.
Yeah, and he's, of course...
Exciting fight. Super exciting.
By the way, does Chael give you guys a lot of advice? Like, does he talk to you about the promotion, about selling yourself, about how to get over, things like that? Or does he kind of...
No, you know, I mean, of course, if we ask, I don't think we've necessarily asked for it.
Okay.
We should utilize
he's
him.
He's so good at that.
Yeah, he's a good friend, though. We talk to him.
Chael's an introverted person, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Like, I've learned that about him.
Yeah.
Speaking with him, like, when we go away, when we go to the fights, all he wants to do is sit in his hotel room, order a movie off the TV. He's the only person I know that still orders movies off the hotel TV.
So funny.
Yeah, and order room service. That's all he likes to do. He doesn't like to interact.
I get that.
Is he like that at the gym?
We didn't see. He was over on this last card.
Yeah.
I don't know that. I think we saw him once.
In the lobby.
Wow.
And that
whole
was
week.
It. Yeah.
Wow. That was it. Yeah.
That's how I was before I met him. I just stayed in my hotel room.
Right.
And we actually just talked about this last night, too. We were like, you know, once you fight, we just got to do the same thing now, too. And so.
Okay. Here's another. Who has more exes?
Easy.
Wow. Okay. That easy, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's easy.
That easy. Okay. My bad. I didn't know. Who says I'm sorry first?
Yikes.
We're both incredibly stubborn.
We are really stubborn. But to be totally fair.
To be completely honest.
Interesting. Wow, yeah. Look at that. I feel like that was the right answer for both of you.
Yeah, I feel like she does.
Okay.
It depends on, I guess, what
that's we're
nice. Fighting about.
We're both very stubborn.
We are really stubborn.
Yeah.
And we like feed the fire. We're really stubborn. Yeah.
Well, I'm done. I feel like you guys really enjoyed this. Yeah.
I love those questions.
Yeah, this could be a...
I want to ask more. Like, yeah, this is like...
What should I have asked?
Like...
I don't know.
Those were good.
Can I be 100% honest?
Yeah.
So I went over the questions last night with my wife.
Yeah.
And I was like, what should I ask? Uh-huh. Like, you know, I don't want to go too personal, this and that. No. And she was like, well, you can't, like, there were other ones that I had on my list. Uh-huh. And she was like, no, don't ask that. That's completely inappropriate.
What's your favorite, like, on the Newlywed Game, like, there's like, what's your favorite body part of
your... Yeah, I didn't want to get
maybe
like...
Maybe it's a wrong show. Yeah. Wrong show.
Yeah.
Is that show still on?
I don't think so. I've seen it recently.
Yeah, I don't know, but
we
have truly talked about wanting to be on that game. So we've gone over other questions and whatnot.
Yeah,
and so,
like those. Like,
yeah, but those are good.
Yeah.
Those are creative. Those are awesome.
Really good.
I appreciate you guys giving me props on that.
To be honest,
yes.
I thought they were going to be a little more dry than that. And
okay.
That was awesome.
Wow. Yeah. So you didn't have high hopes for me.
I do. I know you're a very smart guy, and I know this, but... you know, we're on ESPN.
Sure, sure. There were a couple other ones that I skipped over my list over here, but I feel like for the most part, no. Yeah. For the most part, I think we did enough, you know, just to let the world know that you guys would do well on a show like that.
We would do really well.
Yeah. All right. So, and by the way, what is on your thing here? Is that like a vial? What is that?
Oh, it's it's kind of
just like a cute little thing.
Oh, I thought maybe there was something in there. Oh, okay.
Yeah. That would be really cool, though.
What does it represent? It's just a thing.
It's fashion.
Oh, that's it. Wow, look at you.
It represents
very fashionable.
It's actually a Canadian company that makes it. So,
okay.
You're really fashionable.
So I wore it today.
I appreciate that. Yes, in honor of my home country.
You want to know our favorite trip? One of our favorite trips we went on.
Ever.
So random. Ed Herman asked me to corner him, so... asked her to come with me, and we went to Moncton.
Moncton,
New Brunswick. Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, yeah. You liked it.
Loved it there. Yeah. And it was like this really cute small town, but it ended up being like one of the best trips we've ever been on. Yeah. And we've been to like, you know, Portugal and Mexico.
Sure.
And it was, that was the funnest trip we've had.
Moncton, New Brunswick.
Moncton, New Brunswick.
Yeah. Who knew? Yeah. By the way, Macy Barber taking shots, huh?
Yeah, always.
Why?
I don't know. I think it's just part of the division. Of course, everybody wants the money fight and there's people in line. So
are you interested in that fight?
I think it's an interesting fight. I do think that there's certain disrespect in the UFC and in MMA gets too much attention and it gets too much validity.
Disrespect.
Being disrespectful.
Like being a disrespectful.
Okay.
Yeah, being a disrespectful person should not be valued.
Gotcha.
And I definitely won't.
Okay.
I won't give her the time of day.
You're not taking the bait.
No, I'm not going to take the bait. Okay. And that's why I've seen, you know, stayed relatively silent the entire time. I actually was going to say yes to the fight, and then I think it's completely inappropriate to slide into somebody's husband's DMs.
Wait, what?
Try to get a fight.
She did that?
Yes. So
tell us the story.
No, there's no story. That's
wait,
it.
Wait, like, you just.
That's it. Just messaging my husband on Instagram.
Wow.
Trying to bait you? I'm sure, like, she's trying
to... Is she talking smack in the DMs?
No.
No,
but
she wanted to know a workout routine.
Like, hey,
that
could
we
you
do.
Send me that workout that you're doing?
And yeah.
Oh.
Like just something weird. Anyways.
Yeah. Do you think she... And was this in the midst of her calling you out?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you respond?
No.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's why I stayed relatively quiet about this. Yeah. But it's like, you know what? I'm not going to reward disrespectful people.
Wow.
And it's a reward. It would be a reward for her to fight me, and she doesn't deserve it.
Okay. Do you have an opponent in mind?
I don't know.
You don't.
But I think that there's plenty of people in mind. So the UFC, they'll give me a fight, and I'll accept all of them.
Okay.
She can stay in line.
She can stay. Okay. She's a big fight coming up in October against Jillian Robertson. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you know that. She just said, that's great. Yeah.
I'll fight Jillian Robertson.
Okay. You like her.
She's a good person.
She's nice.
I would love to fight her. She's
nice respectful.
Person. I just think that it's like, it's gotten too far. The disrespect should not be rewarded in our career, in our sport. The UFC highlights it. Everybody highlights people being disrespectful and being bullies and being rude and being a bad person. And that's just, I don't know. I'm not going to shine.
You're not going to tolerate that.
I won't tolerate a shine light on it.
Okay. Wow. I had no idea. All right.
That was my 2 cents about it, and that's all I'll say.
When do you want to return?
Oh, my gosh.
I guess it depends on the hand, right?
Yeah, but I don't think the hand's going to be that big of an issue. I might have to take a few weeks off or whatever. And okay. So I'm not completely convinced it's broken.
Okay.
They wanted me to go to the ER or whatever that night, and I elected not to and just wait till I got home. The doctors there thought it was broken, but I think it was just kind of swollen. So okay. I would prefer to fight before the year is up for okay. sure. So hopefully... Hopefully they can get me on a card before year's end. So,
last thing, Andrade Zhang this weekend title fight.
Ooh, that's exciting.
What do you like? I know it's not your weight class anymore. It was your weight class.
It was my weight class.
What do you got?
I don't think that I've seen
Zhang
fight enough.
Okay.
To really have a true, honest opinion. I watched her one of her fights in the UFC. I've just missed all of her fights. But I think it's definitely exciting. They're both extremely talented.
I think she might win.
Who she fought?
It's a good, it's a really good fight.
Torres,
yeah.
Jessica Aguilar.
Yep.
She's 3-0 in the UFC, 19 in a row.
She's tough, yeah, for sure. It'll be fun.
Yeah,
Who's the co-main of that?
So it's Li Zhangliang, right? Corporate Jake? Is it Li Zhangliang? Corporate Jake, he's sleeping back there. I think it's Li Zhangliang versus someone else, but it's a bit of a thin card, if you will.
For sure.
But it's a fight
huge
on ESPN Plus.
And China, and
yes.
Be really well.
Gigantic for that market. It's going on, I think, at 6 a.m. Eastern, so like 3 a.m. your time. Yeah. You guys aren't that hardcore that you would stay
no,
up.
No, I
right?
don't think so.
Probably not, no. But, pretty crazy though. All 14 fights finishes.
Unbelievable.
Last weekend.
Yeah,
what
a card. Really cool.
That was crazy.
I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah.
The ending was a little bizarre with the mouthpiece. The Matt Mitrione mouthpiece.
Heard he had just got that mouthpiece
yes.
that day or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah.
It really seemed to distract him, which was unfortunate.
It was.
But I love that card. The 11 second leg lock submission. I know that was before your fight. I don't know
yeah,
if you saw
we
it.
Yeah, we saw it yeah. afterwards. It's really
we, the whole time warming up, he was, I can contest that he was
trying
warming
for that.
Up doing that. And he had that game plan in mind going in. And he did it. That was crazy.
Yeah, so. I enjoyed it very much. Alejandro Lara looked great. So, yeah, it was a great card. And you continue to do well, my man. I maintain the biggest mistake in Contender Series history, not signing you. Their loss, Bellator's gain.
Exactly.
And, you're making them regret it. So congratulations. Yeah. Keep
Thank
it
you
up.
So much. Yeah.
Congrats on getting cleared.
Thank you. I know.
Doing your thing.
Hopefully fighting them before the end of the year.
Screw the haters.
Yes, always.
I see them out there, but screw them.
Always.
Oh, we need them too. They're good.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's like course, the great Paris that. Hilton once said, haters make you famous.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right?
So we're happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really, honestly, thank you for changing your flight to do this.
Oh, no, it was great. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it.
Such a big sport fan that being here at ESPN is like,
awesome.
I love basketball. Football
okay, cool.
All,
yeah, this so. Is like a sports wonderland
oh
here,
gosh.
Right?
Yeah, this
See
is
it?
Like, this is unbelievable for me. So, really
cool. Well, I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much. Austin Vanderford, Paige VanZant. There they are, MMA's first couple doing their thing and doing it very well. So, screw you, haters. Stay out of their DMs, okay? They'll walk you out over there. Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it. Good job on the game. You did very well.
Yeah, anytime you want to play that game.
Okay, we'll have you back. Thank Next you. Time, we'll go even crazier. Yeah. There they are. Austin, Paige, the Van Zants. I'm just kidding. There's some of the results from this past week in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And it was a fun card, in case you didn't watch. There you go, some notables. All right, let me tell you before I move along here. Corporate Jake, you were a little worried about my length, but, you know, since... You know, we had an opening. I said, why not? They seem to like our game, by the way. We should do that more often. I don't know how many other people we could do it with, but anyway, I enjoyed it. I had some other questions that I was going to ask, but I thought, you know what? We're a PG show, maybe even a G show. Actually, it's a lot of expletives. Anyway, Vivid Seats. Let me tell you about our good friends over at Vivid Seats. I love Vivid Seats. As I've told you before, they're one of my favorite sponsors. Why? Because they sponsored the first ever Helwani Roadshow back in June in Chicago. They were the title sponsor. And I love what they're all about. They're all about giving us, the fans, the best access possible to the biggest events out there. Concerts, sporting events, anything, fights. Whatever you want to go to, Vivid Seats is your place to go. I don't just talk about them. I don't just want you to support them because they're a sponsor of the show. I believe in them. They have a great product. The app is super easy to use. I highly recommend them. Let me tell you more about our good friends over at Vivid Seats. Listeners of this program, watchers, viewers of this program, you can watch your favorite team, your favorite artists. You can go to your favorite theatrical show, if you will, all through Vivid Seats. and you can earn credit back on all your purchases made through the Vivid Seats app via the Vivid Seats Reward Loyalty Program. Vivid Seats helps fans find their seats to any of their favorite live events, including sports, concerts, theater, and more, all through the Vivid Seats app. Vivid Seats offers great prices and easy purchasing experience, as well as an in-app loyalty program, aka the Vivid Seats Rewards. With reward statuses ranging from MVP to Hall of Famer, customers can earn from 10% up to 16% credit on all their purchases through our app for the month of August. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program and will enjoy double credit all August long. All Vivid Seats confirmed orders are backed by a 100% guarantee. All right. That was a lot of fun. Thank you very much. What's this? So earlier today, my computer crashed. And so I'm actually using Corporate Jake's computer, but the screensaver came on. So now I don't have a computer because there's a password. Okay. Now you just told it to me. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. This is great. Okay, let's see if I got this right. Now, did you say that on the air, Corporate Jake? Okay. Okay, Corporate Jake, telling me this. CB Dalloway, breaking news, of Gilbert, Arizona, has accepted a 2-year sanction for a violation of the UFC anti-doping policy after testing positive for multiple prohibited substances and using a prohibited method. Dalloway, 35, tested positive for anastrozole, growth hormone, releasing. Okay, now there's all kinds of crazy things. So he's been suspended for 2 years, dating back to, oh, wow. Dalloway also tested positive for clomiphene in an out-of-competition urine sample collected on February 9, 2019. Clomiphene, made famous by one Brock Lesnar, or infamous, I should say, is a specified substance in the category of hormone and metabolic modulators and is prohibited at all times under the UFC anti-doping policy. It also says here that additionally, Dalloway received an over-the-limit IV infusion on December 13th. That's like 3 infractions. And this is only, wow, several. This is several infractions by CB Dalloway. The thing cuts off here, but that's kind of wild. So he's going to be out for quite some time. I went a little longer with Paige and Austin. Wanted to talk a little bit about the Conor McGregor interview. I'll just say this about the Conor interview from this past week. Maybe if there's a little more time, we can share some select highlights on the back end of the show. The main takeaway that I had from that interview, which, by the way, all came together after the video was posted by TMZ now around 10 or so days ago. I reached out to his camp, as I typically reach out to his camp every time something happens, to talk to him. He doesn't talk all that much these days, as he mentioned in the interview. I reached out to try to speak to him, and this time they said that they were interested in speaking. And so the thing came together rather quickly beginning last Tuesday. My biggest takeaway in the aftermath of the interview wasn't so much anything that he said. It was the reaction to the things that he said, and in particular, the apology and the state of his career, where things have gone. Conor, no doubt about it, has a lot of work to do with the fans. There was a time not that long ago where he could do no wrong with the fans. He would do a lot of things that were hard to defend, jumping in the cage, the Dolly incident, stuff like that, where it seemed like his fans were willing to overlook these things. They were willing to support him because he was so charismatic, because he was so much fun to watch, because he was winning fights and breaking records. It has been a while since he won a fight. We're approaching the 3-year anniversary of his last victory. His last victory was in November of 2016. And I felt in the aftermath, not so much that the fans don't want to support him anymore. They don't believe in him as much as they once did. They want to see as opposed to hear. They want to actually see him go a year without any incidents. They want to see him win fights. It feels as though they are mad at Conor McGregor. It feels as though they feel betrayed by Conor McGregor. I believe everything that he said. I believe that he feels really bad about the state of his career. I believe that he feels really ashamed about punching that man at that bar in Ireland back in April. I really believe that he is sincere when he talks about these things. But at some point, you can't be sincere anymore. You can't apologize anymore. You just have to do it. You have to stay out of trouble. You have to get back on track. You have to start winning again. You have to remind people what made you so popular, what made you so beloved. And it has been a while since we were reminded of that. And so the fans seem really mad at him. That was my biggest takeaway. Like, they are mad at this guy. They are disappointed in this guy. They feel let down by this guy. I've told the story in the past about being in Ireland 5 years ago for the Brandão fight, and these young kids came up to me and said, you know, that guy gives us hope. I don't know if that's the case anymore. And I think he believes that. He knows that. He feels that. He said it hurts him in his soul when he sees how the fans have turned on him or how they feel about him now. And I didn't really quite get that. Like, look, Conor has always brought out the worst in people, I believe, even dating back to his debut. He beats Marcus Brimage. Oh, he shouldn't get the main event walkout against Holloway. He beats Holloway. Oh, he hasn't done anything to headline this show, you know, against Brandão. Oh, he's getting an easy opponent. Oh, how dare he call out Dustin Poirier? Oh, they're feeding him a cupcake in Dennis Seaver. Oh, how dare he say these things about Jose Aldo? Oh, he's getting a Chad Mendez on short notice. He doesn't deserve an interim title fight. Oh, that punch against Aldo, that was a lucky punch. Oh, you know, why does he deserve a Nate Diaz rematch? Oh, why does he deserve an Eddie Alvarez title fight? Why does he deserve an RDA? Like, he always seems to have brought out the worst in people. Like, people get so passionate, they get so upset about the trajectory of his career. But now, a lot of that has become validated. Oh, I told you this guy wasn't deserving of all of this. He didn't warrant all of this attention, all of this push, all of this marketing. Of course he didn't. And now it's an opportunity for a lot of those fans to be even more vocal. So I've noticed from the fans that they have turned on him and they don't feel as supportive of him. And I think he has noticed that as well. And so I think that really he has to work very hard to get back on track. He has to work very hard to start winning again. And all that will go away. I firmly believe that. But, you know, it has not been a good year. It really hasn't. The sport needs him back. The fighters need him back. He raises the pay, whether we all want to admit it or not. The UFC needs him back. ESPN needs him back. Everyone needs him back. The media needs him back. When Conor's doing good things, it's better for all of us. And I'm happy to see that he recognizes that. Now, is he going to put that into practice? Is he going to be able to stay clean? Is he going to be able to stay out of trouble? Is he going to be able to do more good than bad? Is he going to be able to get back on track and start winning fights? Only time will tell. And so he could say all these things. I believe that he really believes what he says, that he is sincere about the things that he's saying. Now the big question is, can he get back on track? Can he actually do what he is saying? We'll find out. But I thought that that was a sincere and honest Conor McGregor. I know fans are very quick to roll their eyes when someone comes out and apologizes. Oh, it's just PR. Oh, it's just a crafted thing. It's insincere. He was told to do that. I know this man. I've been talking to him for a long time. That was a different Conor. I don't care what any of you say. That was a different Conor McGregor. That was a humbled Conor McGregor. It was an ashamed Conor McGregor. Now, does he turn that into something? Will he put it into practice? We'll find out. But, you know, of course it's PR. Of course, everything we do is PR. They were here for PR just now. The next person we talk to is here for PR. Everything is PR. Like, to say otherwise, you don't like, what do you, of course, everything is PR in the media. Now we find out, is it just PR or is he actually being honest with us? That remains to be seen. But I appreciate everyone watching and all the feedback. I appreciate it. And we'll see. It's going to be an interesting story. We haven't seen him in that light before, and now the pressure's on. He is at the crossroad of his career. Does he go this way or this way? We'll find out. We shall find out. It's going to be very interesting. All right. Let's move along now to our next guest. He made headlines just a couple of weeks ago when he won on the Contender Series. So a Contender Series theme we have thus far. We've got Nick Newell, who lost in his Contender Series fight, didn't get signed. We have Austin Vanderford, who won his Contender Series fight, but didn't get picked up. And now we have Brock Weaver, who won just a couple of weeks ago and did get picked up. There he is. Brock Weaver joining us via the magic of Skype. Brock, how are you?
What's up, man? I'm good.
And who are we being joined by as well behind you?
Well, this is my age once, my hype man. This is the Mowa John Snow. He goes everywhere with me. He
oh,
does
really?
Everything with me.
Okay, I appreciate that. Well, it's nice to meet both of you. It's great to have you on the program. And could I ask, what is painted on your face?
This is my Choctaw tribal paint. Three stripes mean for war. You know, I'm announcing my first UFC fight debut today on your show, hopefully. Oh. And three strikes mean war, man. I'm going to go, you know, I'm gonna give everybody what they want to see. And the contender wouldn't let me paint my face. They wouldn't let me come out with my stuff. They made me wipe it off. And everybody asked why I didn't get, why I didn't do it like I did my other fights. And I'm just, you know, doing it on here. It's part of my character. It's part of my tribe. It's part of me, you know.
I love it. I respect it. Okay, so you do have your debut fight.
Yes.
Okay, tell us about it.
It's October 12th in Tampa, Florida, on the Joanna Jerton card.
Yeah.
And it's against Thomas Gifford at 155.
Okay. Wow. You're moving quick here. You just fought a couple of weeks ago, and now you're getting your debut. So October 12th in Tampa. Do you like this fight? Do you like the date? Do you like the opponent?
Yeah, man. I told Dana in the interview I'll fight 8 times a year. I'll fight anytime. I was already bored after the fight. I was ready to go, you know, again. So I told him, put me in there as fast as I can. They called me. My manager said, Abraham Kawa said that Dana loves me. He wants me in there soon. I said, at 170 and 155, it don't matter to me. Put me in there against whoever, and I'm down. And within weeks, they've hit me up, and they want me in there. And Tampa ain't too far from where I live, so I can bring the whole tribe there, and we can pack it out, make some noise, and hopefully I can get, like, knockout a night or fight a night bonus. My opponent, he's tough, you know. I watched his videos, and that's what I see about him. He's tough, and he can take a lot of punishment, and I can give a lot of punishment, so I look to get a bonus or something, you know.
Yeah, and you are located in Pensacola, correct?
No, I'm located in Alabama.
Alabama?
North of Pensacola, about an hour and a half north of Pensacola, Indian Reservation.
Okay. What is the name of the reservation?
McIntosh, Alabama.
Okay. And your nickname, I want to get this correct. Is it, correct me if I'm mispronouncing it, is it Chattatuska?
Yes.
What does that mean?
It means Choctaw warrior. The Mowa is the band of Choctaw Indians we are. And Choctaw, there's 16 different bands of Indians, and Mowa is a small band of us, and we just took Chattatuska and this Choctaw warrior, you know, and I'm out here, you know, fighting for the tribe because we're still only a state-recognized tribe, and that's the whole goal, is to get seen, to get noticed. Maybe Trump can do something for us. You know, he's over here helping Kobe Covington out, chilling with him in the White House. Maybe he can sign some dotted lines and get us federal recognized. Who knows? You know, if I make enough noise, get a belt, anything can happen.
Okay, so has your success as of late, getting signed by the UFC, have you felt the impact of that among your people? Do you feel like you're giving them hope that you're a representative of them? Or are you feeling that burden?
Yes, for sure. You know, I've always, in the, probably the last 7-8 years, once I started getting some pro fights in and making some noise in the regional area, my people have backed me up, and I'm the only one from the reservation to ever really get out and do something right now, and it gives hope to the younger athletes and to the younger artists and to, you know, not give up, because there's been plenty of times I could have gave up and not been where I am. And nobody ever expected a Mowai out of McIntosh, Alabama, to make it to the UFC. So, yeah, they all behind me, man. And hopefully we can take it far with the will of the Lord, man. We can get some things done now.
And what is the name of your reservation?
McIntosh, Alabama.
Okay, that's what it's called. Okay, and who
City? Yeah.
Okay, and who introduced you to mixed martial arts? When did you start?
I started mixed martial arts when I was 15. My older cousin James Orso, he was a pro fighter. He fought. He never actually even fought amateur. He went straight pro back in the day, and he fought 8 or 9 fights, and he retired on a good record, and. He introduced me at 15, and then I scattered around and trained at another place down and not too far from him called Team Storm. And then I moved to Port City, and then I moved to Miami. But when I started, I was 15, fighting out of a local bar, saying I was at my cousin's house, told my parents I was at my cousin's house staying the night, and I was sneaking off to Mississippi in bars with fake IDs, fighting grown men at 16 years old.
Wow. Yeah. You weren't afraid? You weren't intimidated by them?
Of course, but I guess once you put you want to fight because you're training, and then when you really step in the cage and you're like, dang, what am I doing in here with these grown men? I'm just a kid, And then you get in there and the punches and it's you get punched and you feel his power and it's just not bad. Then it's just a fight. I mean, I've been fighting all my life, winning and losing. And after you get past the nerves and the first 5 seconds, then it's ball game then.
And so you get the call to be on Contender Series, but prior to that, correct me if I'm wrong, you did bare knuckle, correct?
Yes.
Were you worried that doing that might preclude you from getting the call in the UFC? No one has gone yet. In this era of bare knuckle, no one, to the best of my knowledge, has gone from that to the big leagues, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I had took a 10-month off from MMA and got my life together and got closer with God. And when I was offered the bare knuckle fight, it was against a legend. From MMA, from the UFC, Joe Riggs.
Right.
You know? And I was walking around like 185, and I'm pretty sure he's over 200, you know, and they wanted to fight at 185. So I was like, hey, man, you know, good little payday. I'm a good boxer. It's matching my skill aspect. Joe Riggs is a powerful hitter. I thought I could beat him in speed and out technically. And, you know, I just wanted to be – the reason I did it, I just wanted to beat a legend. That's what I'm in this for, man, is to fight the strongest people, to fight the legends, to just make a name for myself in this sport and fighting in combat sports, period. And Joe Riggs was just a big opportunity to really secure something like that. And I lost a decision, but it was close, and I felt satisfied with it.
Why did you
get hurt either.
Right. Why did you take a break from the sport?
I took a break. I was I wasn't doing too good in my personal life. Me and my wife had split up, and before we were married, and I just was partying a lot and being local. I had just beat Felony, Crazy Horse, whatever, and thought I was on the high horse of that. I thought I took a break, thinking that I could get a late notice UFC calls on a 4-fight win streak, just beat him, and just for some dumb reason, I just took a real long break and never knew I was going to retire for good. But I've been in camp since I was 16 years old. I've never took a break, you know, and I just think that it was time for me to take a break, and it helped me out, cleared my mind, got my life together. And now I'm back, and I got on another little fight win streak, and now I'm here.
You feel better now?
Yes, much better.
Okay, so it came at a good time, maybe take a bit of a reset, and now here you are, you get the Contender Series fight. You get the Contender Series fight, and the fight doesn't actually come to fruition. Your opponent has to pull out. What was that like for you? Like, you're so close just a few weeks ago, and you're there, and then he pulls out at the 11th hour, and of course, they ended up rescheduling you. It all works out, but just being in Las Vegas so close to potentially realizing your dream, and you have to wait a little longer. How did you handle that?
Yeah, man, I was, you know, cutting weight. I was actually on weight Sunday night and went to sleep about 12 and woke up about 7. I'd already made my weight, 171. And Sean Shelby had texted me and said, hey, this is Sean Shelby from the UFC. Stop cutting weight. Your opponent got sick. Immediately, I was crushed, you know. No, this did not just happen, you know. So I called my manager. He told me what happened, and then Sean called me back at about 12 that day and confirmed that I ain't fighting and that he was going to get me another fight. And just a mix of emotions, man. I flew out from Bama. I did this camp. This was my shot. But I feel like my whole career has been a roller coaster of me almost making it. Like December 21st, I took a fight on the Dana White Looking for a Fight show in Island Fights. And fought my teammate because there was nobody would fight me and nobody would fight him. So we fought each other to sparring every day, killing each other. Hey, might as well get in the ring and put on a show for Dana White. And hopefully one of us get the contract or both or, you know, whatever. And he had broke his foot or something and couldn't come to that. The night of weigh-ins, just like this was. It was both night of weigh-ins after I done made weight, ready to fight. Things like this happen. So it's like my whole career is like, man, what is this? Am I ever going to make it? Am I ever going to get a chance to prove myself, to shine in front of the man, you know? And yeah, it was a letdown. But I talked to Sean that night under week one of the contender, and he told me that he had already found me another opponent. He gave me his name. I looked him up immediately. Saw that he was a tough, skilled, athletic guy. He's coming down from 185. But I train with bigger people all the time. And at that point, man, I was just like, I don't care if it's Rashad's guy's son. I don't care if you give me Rashad Evans. I'm going to fight him. I'm going to do what I do and hopefully get that contract. And I did. And, yeah.
I love everything about you, Brock. I love the way you fight. You're a fun fighter to watch. I love the fact that you understand the showmanship aspect to the game. Your post-fight interview with Laura Sanko was phenomenal, the best one in the history of that series. And I'm wondering if you are someone who grew up watching pro wrestling, because I see a lot of pro wrestling elements in you. And I'm not saying that to disparage you. I'm giving you a compliment. You understand that it's not just about going out there and fighting fights. So who are your inspirations from the world of pro wrestling? Because I see it when you talk, the way you look right now, everything about it to me is pro wrestling, which is brilliant. We need more of this in the sport, if you ask me. Who are some of your inspirations?
Man, my grandpa absolutely is like the biggest wrestling fan of all time. Like, dude watches so much. He still watches wrestling. He watches the Japanese wrestling. He watches every wrestling that can come on TV anywhere. And like, that's all he does. Watch Wheel of the Fortune and wrestling. So I grew up right there watching it, man. The Rock, of course, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin. Goldberg is the greatest of all time to me, if you ask Sting. Whoa. I love Sting because of the long hair, the paint, the face, you know, Bret Hart, of course. You just had him on the show earlier. I loved him. I love the Hardy Brothers, man. Fighting is something that I've always been natured to, because I feel like I'm a warrior and I've always been fighting. But you might not can fight forever. You know, I always thought I have a good personality. I paint my face up good. I used to be the Joker 4 or 5 Halloweens in a row. Everybody thought I played that part good. I mean, my next career could be acting or could be in wrestling, you know, and that's always a B option for me. And when I go out to fight, the most important part about fighting is to show up at the weigh-ins, to look the part, to play the part, to get in my opponent's head, to get him mentally more weak than he already is, because we're both nervous and we're both scared and we both don't really know what's going to happen on fight night, you know. So if I can get in his head a little bit more by putting on my face paint, by dressing up, by acting like I don't really care about this, I'm just going to go out there and scalp you, then, you know, it's going to help me in the cage. I get in there and I look through his soul and I catch him not looking eye contact with me. And that's just fuel for me. And the way the energy I bring, the energy my boys bring right here behind me, I mean, it's all part of who we are. With Mowai, we always grew up. It's all about the hype. It's all about the showsman. You know, and I've always been called a showman. I feed off that, the walkout, the everything. That's the fight's just a fight. We don't know what's going to happen in there. I know I'm going to come in, I'm going to fight you. And one of us going to get hurt or not. One of us going to get knocked out, submitted, a decision. Oh, well, but I just got to make sure every time that I feel the energy, I feel my people, I feel the audience. I take my opponent's people. And by the end of the fight, they vote. They going for me secretly, you know, and that's what I love. And that's what I've always tried to bring. And by the grace of God, I've been able to do it. And yeah, man,
I hope they let you be you, even despite, you know, because I get worried about the Reebok deal and all that. I hope they let you paint your face and do your thing, because we need personalities like this in our sport. You know what I mean? Not everyone should be the same. We don't want uniformity, right? That's important. Are you going to bring your hype man with you?
Oh, yeah.
To your fight. He'll be there.
He's going to be there. You see him.
In your corner? Even though
no,
he doesn't?
No, he ain't going to be in the corner.
No.
He ain't going to be in the corner, but we're going to try to get him in the walkout.
Okay. So. Oh, I like that. Now, let me ask you this. Since you had such a great promo, you know, after the victory on Contender Series, can I get a promo about October 12th, Tampa Bay or Tampa, Florida? Can we get something about your official UFC debut? What's on your mind when I ask you about that?
With a promo, what you mean?
I want to know why people should tune in. Why should people watch this fight? Why should people care about Brock Weaver? Who are you? There's a million of fighters out there. There's a million different guys trying to get over. Why should I watch you on October 12th?
Well, I mean, there's no other way. You're going to see me. You're going to see me at the weigh-ins. You're going to see me painted up. You're going to see me come. I'm looking him in the eye. I mean, he's probably watching his interview right now. And if you are Thomas Gifford, just know you in for a war, man. These three stripes, this means war. And October 12th, that's exactly what it's going to be. I'm going to come. I'm going to try to take your head off. And if you ain't ready, then that's what's going to happen. I'm not just fighting for a family. I'm not fighting for kids. I'm not fighting just for anything. I'm fighting for all the kids and families of my reservation. I'm fighting to be the federal recognizers. I'm fighting for all the tribes out there. You know, if I'm fighting for Trump to see us. I want Trump, man. If Trump really wants to make America great again, then he should look towards the first people of the land and start federal recognized and state recognized tribes out here that are in poverty. I mean, I'm fighting for I ain't just fighting like Connor. He fights for Ireland. Right? Ireland's not even behind him no more. I'm fighting for a tribe. I'm fighting for all the tribes out there, man. You know, I'm fighting for all the Christians out there, man. I'm fighting for God. I don't want to be no fake Christian in there saying that you're somebody's godly and then they get out and they ain't got no fruits in their life. I'm fighting for the right cause, man. And October 12th, we're going to see that. And then every other fight, we're going to see that. And I'm gonna make my way to the top.
I love it. Brock Weaver, welcome to the UFC, my man. This is going to be a lot of fun. I love everything that you're about and what you're doing, and you really get it. And I hope they do let you bring your hype man out there with you. Because this is great. I love it, my man. Congratulations on winning the Contender Series fight. Again, welcome to the UFC, and good luck to you on October 12th. And thanks for breaking that news right here on the program. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, bro, for having me on the show. It was an honor, man. My whole goal has always been to talk to Errol Wani and Joe Rogan, because when you talk to you guys, you made it.
Well, you got one down. Perhaps you'll get the next one on October 12th. Thank you so much, Brock. We'll talk to you soon. All right, there he is, Brock Weaver, and his hype man. Look at that. That guy gets it. That guy gets it. Look at his face. I love it. Great stuff from Brock Weaver. If you did not see his post-fight interview with Laura Sanko on the Contender Series, do yourself a favor and go check that out. It was great. It was the best one on the show. And this season, I think, you know, it's had some moments here and there. You know, you had the Brendan Lochnane moment, which didn't amount to him getting signed, but it got some attention. There haven't been as many, I think, can't-miss prospects. I would say that he's probably of the ones signed, unless I'm forgetting about someone right now. He was the one that I think really broke through the most, got the most amount of attention, I think. Anyone else come to mind? No. That actually got signed by the UFC. The post-fight interview was great. He was all fired up. Dana White was laughing, loving it. It was really great stuff. So that's Brock Weaver, and he is making his way to Tampa on October the 12th. Coming up in a matter of moments, we're going to be joined by Jermaine Durandamy. It was announced late last week, or early last week, I think, that she is fighting Amanda Nunes at UFC 245 on December 14th in Las Vegas. That's one of the titles on the line that night. I suspect another title fight will be added to that card. There have been some rumblings that Max Holloway versus Alex Volkanovski is going to be on that card, or is already on that card. What I could tell you is both fighters want to be on that card, especially now that that fight isn't happening at UFC 243, which is a shame, which makes you kind of regret the fact that they put Holloway on the Edmonton card, because I really think if they were trying to sell 60,000 tickets to the UFC 243 card on October 5th in Australia, Melbourne, Australia, as the locals like to say, Melbourne, Australia, as the locals like to say, that would have really cemented it. I think, as I reported last week, they were at 30,000. I haven't checked since, but they shouldn't have the hardest time. It'll probably pick up. 30,000 right off the bat is a supremely impressive number. No doubt about that, but that fight is not going to happen on October 5th, and now they're looking at it happening on December 14th. So do they put that fight on December 14th in addition to the Durandamy Nunes fight? I think it makes a lot of sense, but do they want to stack it with two, maybe three titles on that card? Will Jon Jones fight? Jon Jones has said repeatedly he wants to fight on the December 14th card. The only guy out there right now is Jan, who we'll be talking to later in the program. But what about MSG? Who's going to be on that one? Colby Covington, Kamaru Usman makes all the sense of the world. I was hearing lately that they were having a little trouble finalizing that fight. So do they try to go with Nate Diaz versus Jorge Masvidal on that card, on the MSG card? I think Jorge Masvidal versus Nate Diaz is, as I said last week, one of the few fights that is a non-title fight that can headline a pay-per-view. And so you don't need anything else. They're going to make a lot of money. They're going to attract a lot of attention. They're going to make you a lot of money. The question is the UFC prepared to pay them what they think they should earn for that fight? What they want to make for that fight? That is far from done at this point. Both fighters want it. That's clear. They're not playing games. They both very much want that fight next. Masvidal wants Nate. You saw the reaction. You saw the look on his face. He's commented on it since. Nate wants Masvidal. Most importantly, he controls it here. And he wants that fight. He's not using Masvidal to get to Conor McGregor or Khabib Nurmagomedov. He wants that fight. A, you know, that show is in 10 weeks. MSG is in 10 weeks. If they can't make Covington versus Usman for MSG, that's the fight to make. But that's in 10 weeks. Can they agree in that short amount of time? Remains to be seen. And I don't think, so if they can't get that fight done for MSG, basically, if Usman Covington is not going to happen in MSG, and I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but I just heard that there was a bit of a snafu, if you will. But we'll see. If that doesn't happen for MSG, then you go to Nate versus Masvidal, and you try to get that done. And then, if you can get that done, then where does that leave us with December 14th? Because then you're looking at a potential three title fight card, because you can't swap one of those, meaning you can't say, oh, John Jones, go on December 14th because... Excuse me, John Jones go on November 2nd at MSG because Nate and Masvidal aren't going to be on a card with one championship fight, maybe two championship fights, because those guys are going to make a lot of money. No sense in splitting up the pie, especially when you have a couple of champions, you get pay-per-view points. So it's a really interesting time. What are they going to do with those last two shows? November 2nd, December 14th. And when I say those last two shows, I mean the last two pay-per-views. Do they go with Covington Usman on that November 2nd card? And then what happens to Nate Masvidal? And if they can't get Covington Usman on November 2nd, do they go with Nate Masvidal on November 2nd? And then do they go with three title fights on December 14th? Do you understand what I'm saying? It's all very confusing. Anyway, one fight that we know that is going to happen on December 14th right now is Jermaine Durandamy versus Amanda Nunes, rematch of a fight that happened almost 6 years ago. We spoke to Durandamy last month about potentially getting this title fight. She is now getting the title fight. She joins us right now via the phone. Jermaine, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. So congratulations on getting this big opportunity. Were you surprised when you got the call that you'd be fighting for the belt next?
Yeah, of course. You're always surprised. You never know what's going to happen with the UFC, right? So I was surprised, but I was happy to hear it, and I'm ready to go. So I'm very happy with this opportunity.
What was your reaction to the way the whole situation with Chris Cyborg unfolded? Now she's not a part of the UFC anymore, and it seems like her not being a part of the UFC led to you getting the title shot.
Yeah, what can I say about it? I think it's a very sad, sad situation. I think Chris, she did a lot for the sport, and she's a woman. She made her own decisions, and so does Dana and the UFC. And, you know, it's not up to me to think much about it, you know. They had a disagreement or whatever, and this is the end result. But, you know, with her being fired or not continue working for the UFC made it possible that I was going to fight Amanda earlier than probably was planned.
If Chris did re-sign with the UFC, and if they did give her a title shot, were there already any talks of you fighting someone else in like a number one contender fight, or had it not reached that point yet?
No, it really did not have reached that point yet, and that was because, and if it was, I didn't mind fighting a fight before that. Like I said, you know, I came out injury-free with the Aspen Ladd fight, and I feel healthy right now. I'm ready to go, so I wanted to stay active. So I said before I was not going to wait, so I hoped I was going to fight somewhere in December. You know, that's what I was praying for, and I got what I wished for, so so we got to go now.
Were there any talks of this fight happening at 145 for the 145 belt as opposed to 135?
To be honest, Eric, Mario, I leave that up to my management. You know, Brian Butler, my manager with Sucker Punch, he takes care of all that stuff. And I think the UFC knows I'm aiming for 135. So, you know, they might could have offered it, but, you know, I was still going to stick to the 135. I still believe, like I've said it many times, I still believe, honestly, there's a lot to do in the 135 division, which is very active. And, you know, let's stir some shit up.
So, and I like that and respect that. So as you know, like this fight announcement is relatively fresh. It's relatively new. Are you prepared? So we're what, you know, a little less than 4 months away from the fight. I suspect every interview that you do leading up to this fight will bring up, you know, your first title reign, right? And what happened. And you have to talk about that just as you're starting to move away from all that. Are you prepared for this? Is this like the unfortunate byproduct to this whole great situation for you?
Ariel, I'm so ready for it. You know, the most important thing is, you know, I have control over how I react on the situation, and my sole focus is to be the best Jermaine I can possibly be. You know, this is going to be a very, very tough fight for me, but also for Amanda. I believe, you know, I bring something to the table right now that I wasn't able to bring 6 years ago, and I'm different. I'm a different fighter. She's a different fighter, so it's going to be a totally different game. And, you know, the past will always be the past, and people can always bring that up, you know, but after December 14th, it's all up to me to leave it all in there and leave all the talks behind.
What do you bring differently to the table that you didn't bring prior and to your first fight in 2013?
I enjoy being here. I enjoy doing this. I love doing this. I appreciate it more than ever before. You know, I've worked a lot on the things I should have worked on, and mentally, physically, I'm so much better than I've ever been. And now having 4 months to prepare myself for the toughest fight of my career, that's all I need.
Wow. So are you saying back in 2013 when you fought it the first time, you didn't necessarily enjoy MMA?
I enjoyed it, but I didn't embrace it yet. I was still that kickboxer,
okay,
scared to be taken down. And I'm not that kickboxer anymore. I believe right now I'm really an MMA fighter. If the fight goes to the ground, we are going to see a different fight than we saw in 2013. I'm not going to be helpless anymore and not know what to do. You know, I'm going to bring a different fight. That's for sure.
What do you remember from that first fight, from being in there with her? I mean, obviously it was a pretty short fight. It ended in the first round. Unique setting, mm-hmm, right? Fight for the troops, Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Just the troops there, but as far as the actual fight goes and being in there with Amanda, and this was before she was Amanda Nunes, arguably the greatest of all time, mm-hmm, before she was a champion. What do you remember from that experience of fighting her?
You know, I've never focused too much on Amanda. I've learned a lot about myself going into that fight with absolutely the wrong mindset, you know, not being as committed as I am now. You know, what I remember is that I made a lot of mistakes. But honestly, I would love to face the baddest woman on the planet. And at this point, this is right now Amanda Nunes. And that's what I love to do. And that drives and motivates me enough. I don't look at that fight 2013 anymore. I'm past that fight. I've done so much more. I've worked on so much more stuff. I'm not that girl from 2013 anymore. I'm a different version of myself right now.
When's the last time you watched that fight, if ever?
I think 2 days after that fight was the last time I watched it.
Okay.
I've never watched it again. I know everything. I know everything what happened in the fight. It was that clear.
And do you think you will watch it in the build-up to this one, or are you done watching that one?
No, I'm done watching that. I'm not even going to watch Amanda's fight that she fought recently.
Really?
You know, I leave that up. Yeah, I leave that up to my coaches. I honestly, I'm focused on me, and they know what to train on. They know the points I, you know, I should, you know, should take in my camp. But I'm not, you know, I'm really focused on being the best me, and that's all I can do. I mean, I can focus on Amanda and try to change my game in 4 months of something I worked for 20 years. That's going to be very hard. You know, I can work on the things I need to work on and be the best version of me. And that is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be the best version of me.
Is that something that you typically do? Like, you do you not watch your opponent's fights leading up to your bouts against them?
Yeah, absolutely. Really? I hate watching. I absolutely hate watching it. I just don't like it. I honestly, when I step in there, I want to put my will on my opponents. It doesn't matter what they want to do. I want to fight my game plan. I don't want to think what Amanda's going to do. I know what she's going to do. Or, you know, in a fight, we will see what she's going to do. We can adjust to that. After 20 years of fighting, you learn how to adjust at some points. And like I said, my coaches, they watch it a couple times. We don't even mention my opponent's name during camp. It's wow. Just, I'm going to fight somebody, and we're focusing on Jermaine, on her weaknesses, on her strong points, the things we need to work on to be the best me.
But I'm assuming you watched her fights, you know, like when she just fought Holly Holm and the Chris Cyborg fight. You've seen those, right? Like in real time?
No, I've seen clips
really?
Of the Cyborg fight, but I haven't seen the Holly fight. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Wow. And you have no interest in watching. You're about to go in a cage with her. You have no interest in seeing how she did in her last fight.
No, I know what she did in her last fight. I have no interest in seeing it because wow. I know I will not face the Amanda who was fighting Holly. I will not face Amanda who was fighting Chris Cyborg. I'm facing Amanda Nunes who will face me. So she will come in this fight with a different game plan she has for Holly or for Cyborg. I'm a different version. I'm me. No, I'm not going to watch. Because I can look at things and be like, okay, she might do this or she might do that, but I'm a different fighter from them. I have a totally different fighting style than they have. So she has to adjust too. And I don't like adjusting
sure.
that much.
And so if you would have gone, Jermaine, on like a 15-fight winning streak now, right, but for mm-hmm. whatever reason not fought for the belt, like Tony Ferguson, you win 12 in a row, you don't fight for the belt. I'm sure you know that part of the legacy will be what happened when you won the title. But now you win this fight, all that goes away. Like there's a whole new narrative. Do you reckon? Is that of interest to you? Does that get you excited?
Hell yeah! But listen, imagine if I win the belt, how great it's going to be. But imagine how great it's already been. I'm fighting for the title again. Yeah. So many people told me I should stop. I'm worthless. I cannot fight. I should stop fighting. And guess what? I got badly injured. You know, doctors told me you can never fight again. So many people have told me that, but I never gave up, Ariel. And look at me. I bet you. It doesn't matter. Even after the Aston Led, not a lot of people thought I was going to get a title shot. And I'm going to fight for the title after so many people told me I was done. I already won. I can only make this party even better. I'm in control of making this the best party ever.
And what was the injury?
My eye.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Wow. yeah, that you revealed after. I mean, that's just amazing. And I'm sure there was a part of you considering what happened. Maybe you thought you'd just never get a title. Like UFC wouldn't trust you. They wouldn't want to give you that shot mm-hmm. or put you in that opportunity, right? This must feel good just to be given this opportunity.
Hell yeah, of course it feels good to be given this opportunity. But at the same time, my team and I, we worked our asses off to get in this position. And if the UFC wanted me to fight another couple people before they would give me that title shot, I would have been okay with that. Because I would have fought my ass off to get that title shot again. Just to get it again. Just to prove myself that. And not only me, but so many people out there, their hard work does pay. And I'm the living proof it does work out. Just do not give up if you have a dream.
You know, a lot of people talk about like being in a good mood and being happy, being in a better place, and you don't often believe them. Like, I can't see you right now. You're on via phone for those just listening. I can feel the smile. Like, I can see the smile on your face. I can feel the happiness. I'm not just saying this to make you feel good. I can feel that you are much happier than you were like a year ago when we were talking. It's amazing. How did you do this? How did you turn it around?
Well, first of all, thank you, but, I honestly believe that, you know, a day without laughter is a day wasted, you know. I mean, life is so short. I see people around us, you know, that die so young, and children in a hospital being so sick, or children in war zones, or people in war zones, you know, people that doubt themselves, don't believe that they can do things. I mean, life is too short to feel sad. You can feel sad. I feel sad at some points too. You know, I don't always smile either. I have my bad days too. We all have them. You know, but there comes a point I just put my shoulders underneath it, and I like to think in solutions, not in problems. You know, if one thing doesn't work, we find another way to make it work. But we're going to make it work.
I love it.
I just want to be positive.
You're an inspiration. It's an amazing story. Also, a lot of new fans might not know, you once fought a man in a boxing match, right? Wasn't he like 40 pounds heavier than you? Is that accurate?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, that's accurate.
And you knocked him out,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, I did. I did knock him out, yeah.
And this was like a real fight. It wasn't like a fixed match or a fake. It was like a real boxing match.
This was a pro boxing match. Yeah, absolutely.
That's insane.
He tried to rip my head off.
What were the circumstances? How did they get away with booking this fight?
Well, the TV was interesting in doing something like that. And this guy had only 3 fights, and I had like 20 fights. And they said, are you interested in doing that? Because you have way more experience. And he wants to take it up with a girl, but we want to show it on TV. And I'm like, and first I was like, always like, you know, a woman should not fight a man. You know, a man is mostly stronger than a woman. They should not do that. But at the same time, I was like, man, this is a challenge. But this is, I'm an adrenaline junkie. I like to try things. And I'm not going to lie, I was scared as hell, you know, in the beginning. When I looked at him, I'm like, damn, he's big. But, I mean, you know, what? Well, yeah. Like Jorge Masvidal said it last time, you know, and I love his words. It's just a fight. Yeah. We're just going to fight.
Wow. And he was going 100%, right? Like, he didn't take it easy on you.
Oh, so I knocked him down in the first round. He got an 8 count. And in the 4th round, he just pushed me against the rope, started banging on my head. And I'm like, okay, double defense. I saw a hole and I knocked him out.
And what round was this?
The 4th round.
First?
No, the 4th.
Fourth round. And how many rounds was it supposed to be?
I think 5 or 6.
Five. And what year was this?
God, man, I was young. It must have been, I think, 2006, maybe?
2006.
I don't know exactly. Maybe 2007. I don't exactly know. I'm sorry.
Well, the reason I ask you about this, I don't know if you've seen Henry Cejudo calling out Valentina Shevchenko. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I saw it.
What do you make of this? Considering you're the actual, you're one of the very few people that actually did fight a man. What do you make of this?
I don't know. Just probably a PR stunt. I stick to that. You know, I don't know. I honestly believe a man, and maybe I'm not in the right position to say this, but I honestly believe a man and a woman should actually not fight. You know, we can train together, but we should not fight. But at the same time, you know, if it was a kickboxing match, so let's say it was a kickboxing match, I honestly, with all due respect for Henry Cejudo, but Valentina is a different kind of beast. You know, I believe if it was a kickboxing match, she might kick his ass. I absolutely believe that.
Wow.
In MMA, you know, with his wrestling, you know, he's a man.
Sure.
You know, I believe you shouldn't do that. But if it was a kickboxing match, no takedowns. I put my money on Valentina, without any doubt.
After you beat that guy in around 2006 or so, did anyone ever come to you with more offers to fight guys, or was it just that one time?
No, that was just one time.
Really?
One
interesting. Time. I thought, like, you can have a whole career as the woman who beats up on men.
No, but I also said after the fight, I'm not going to do that again. I mean, that was silly. I mean, that was crazy. Yeah, we should not do that.
Okay. Jermaine, I really want to congratulate you on getting this, because I think it's an amazing story. Everyone, you know, everyone was doubting you, whether or not you'd get this opportunity, get this chance. It's a beautiful thing that you're getting this chance. You're getting a chance to not only fight for the belt again, but to avenge your last loss back in 2013. And you're doing it with a smile, and you're an inspiration. So I'm really happy for you. Congratulations on getting the fight, and good luck in training. Good luck in preparing for it December 14th.
Thank you so much, Ariel. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me on the show. Thank you.
Always. There she is. The Iron Lady herself, Jermaine Durandamy, meets Amanda Nunes December 14th in Las Vegas. So we'll see if that's the only title fight on the card. We shall find out. Will they put another? Will they put two more? It all depends. There's a whole domino effect that has to happen from November 2nd to December 14th. It's going to be an interesting end of the year for the UFC. Do we have our next guest lined up? I was a little confused. All right. Coming up in a matter of moments, it is going to be very exciting for me personally. I don't often – you ever see that Chris Farley Saturday Night Live episode where he's interviewing Paul McCartney and he's like, remember that one time where you did this? Remember that one time where you did that? Well, that's what I'm going to do right now for you, because it's not often that you get to interview a childhood hero. And I don't like to say this because I don't want to make, you know, the guests, you know, I don't want to age them. I don't want to make them feel old. But to me, Bret Hart, as I said at the top of the show, when I was a young kid, I idolized this man. I adored this man. He was my favorite pro wrestler, is my favorite pro wrestler of all time. He is a legitimate Canadian hero. He, at one point, in my opinion, was the most famous Canadian on the planet, more so than the great Wayne Gretzky. And when I was a young kid, when I would go to the doctor, I would close my eyes and I was afraid of the needle, and I would think of a happy thought, and the happy thought was Bret Hart winning the WWF championship. That's how much I loved him. And, loved the Hart Foundation and Owen Hart. I remember the first grade, my parents took me to, the Montreal Forum surprise birthday party. All the kids, it was a Friday night at the Montreal Forum. All the kids were talking about going to WWF that night. I didn't have tickets. I'm playing in the basement with my brothers, and all of a sudden I see some kids' feet walk through the window. I remember this vividly. I say, who are those kids up there? I run upstairs, and it's a surprise party for me. Surprise party for me, and we're all going to the Forum to watch WWF, a house show on a Friday night, first grade. I'm like 6 or 7, and I remember Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect, went the distance, time limit match, phenomenal match, and I remember they went back and forth. Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect, the late, great Kurt Hennig, they were magic together. They were the best, and the match was going back and forth. It was great, and at the very end, Perfect is out, and Bret Hart crawls to him, and he goes on top of him, and they go 1, 2, and then the bell rings, and they said, time limit. Match ends in a draw. And I was devastated. I was eating it up. We were all the way in the rafters, but it's one of the greatest memories of my childhood. And so to get the opportunity to have him on the show in a matter of moments is a huge, massive honor for me. The man has been through a lot. Certainly, you know, the ups and downs, well documented. If you've never seen the documentary Wrestling with Shadows, I could not recommend it anymore. And I know there's some of you say, oh, pro wrestling, MMA. This guy's a legit shooter. The Hart family, Stu Hart, are you kidding me? The Dungeon in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, legit tough people. Like, I don't care what you think of wrestling, pro wrestling, scripted, fake, whatever, legit tough guys. Absolute legit tough guys. Shooters, if you will. They will stretch you out. They will make you cry. They will make you beg. They will make you say uncle, as they say, all of them. Stu all the way down to, you know, the youngest. Amazing. And in a matter of moments, we're going to be joined by the best there is, the best there was, and the best that there ever will be, Bret the Hitman Hart. I cannot wait for this. The pride of Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And like I said, back in 2012, we had the opportunity to interview him prior to UFC 149. Paul Lazenby, the great Paul Lazenby, hooked me up with him. And I couldn't believe just how down to earth he was. Went out of his way, drove to where we were staying, did the interview with me. It was incredible. I couldn't believe it. This is Bret Hart. This is Canadian royalty. One of my all-time favorite athletes of all time. One of my all-time favorite athletes of all time. Yes, I said that. I'm acting like a bit of a fanboy here, but I'm allowed to. So this is my Chris Farley, Paul McCartney moment. Watch me build this up so much and he doesn't show up and I'm left all very sad. Okay, I take that back. He is here. The best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. I don't know if he heard my intro there, but it's an honor, an absolute honor and a privilege to say hello to Bret Hart on my program right now. Bret, how are you?
I'm doing really good.
I appreciate you doing this.
Catch the tail end of that.
Okay, well, I just want to let you know. I mean, look, you hear this all the time, Bret, and I'm not trying to make you feel old or to age you or anything like that, but you were my guy, Bret. When I was a young kid, and I would go get a shot at my doctor. My doctor would tell me, think of something positive. Think of something that makes you feel good. I would close my eyes and I would think of you winning the WWF championship. That's how much I loved you, Bret, back in the day. So for me, when I say it's an honor, it truly is an honor to talk to you on the show today.
Well, that's what it's all about for me anyway. That's what's driven me for my career, and still the cherry on the cake for me is that I tried to be a good hero for wrestling fans, and it seems to have been a lasting impression on. I meet fans every day that appreciate the everything I did. So that's the joy that I get from a career like the one I had.
We had a fighter at the top of the show today named Nick Newell. He has one arm. He's a congenital amputee. He's fighting in Bellator. And he said that when he was a youngster, you actually gave him one of your glasses. And it was one of the happiest days of his life. And till this day, he's a fan of yours. So you're touching even current MMA fighters with the gesture that you did back in the day with the glasses. I'm just curious, off the top, how are you feeling these days, Brett? How are you doing physically?
Oh, I'm doing really well. I'm all good on the cancer. I know some people were worried about me with the cancer a few years ago, but everything is good. I'm fit and healthy and loving life, so I got no complaints.
I don't know if I was ever more disgusted, more upset than when I saw that man attack you at the Hall of Fame ceremony back in April. What was that all about? And did he hurt you at all?
No, he didn't really hurt me, but I think some of the guys that piled on top of him affected me a little bit, but nothing in a serious way. But I'm just grateful that nothing serious did come from that event. It was, when you think of John Lennon and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Being a celebrity can be a dangerous occupation sometimes, and things like that can happen to anybody. And I'm just surprised that he was able to run all the way down and get into the ring the way he did. But I think you learn from stuff like that. I luckily had no problems out of that. Like I just hope that I think it was a bad move for the guy that did it. It was a bad day for him more so than it was a bad day for me.
Did you know his motives? Did you ever find out why he did this?
No, I never heard much about it one way or the other. Not yet, anyway. But I think I've heard two different accounts. One was that he was a huge Vince McMahon fan, and then I heard that he was the opposite. I heard that he was upset because the girls were the main event, and he was just trying to disrupt WWE. Period. So I don't know which one of those is true. I don't really care. I went there with the sole objective of, remembering my late tag team partner and celebrating our careers and all the fun we had together as wrestlers. It was an important Hall of Fame for me, more important than my own induction a few years ago. It was one I did out of, it was a very emotional night for me to go in there and talk about Jim and the Hart Foundation and all that. And so when all that happened, I was so mad that somebody interrupted my speech. And I'm just glad that I was able to get back up and finish my respects to my tag partner.
When you're at WWE events these days, Brett, do you feel comfortable there? Do you feel welcome, or will it never quite be the same?
In the ring or out of the dressing room?
You know, backstage around the people. I mean, for the longest time, we thought you'd never show up to a WWE event ever again and be associated with them. And I'm just wondering if, you have valid reasons for not being comfortable or for not feeling welcome. I'm just wondering how you feel when you go to these events. Do you feel like it's family, or do you still feel, like there's friction there?
It's to the contrary. I think, I worked with so many people on such a high level, being the champion and being the superstar I was down there for so long and sort of the main superstar for quite a few years. You make so many friends, whether it's technicians and television people or some a cameraman or a guy with a clipboard or somebody in the charity, works for the charities and some of the different things you do or with media and, there's so many friends you meet on so many different levels. But for me, it's more like a family. I look forward to going to the back. I have a lot of friends and people that love and cared a lot about me and everything that happened with the big fallout with Vince and the screw job and all that stuff never affected any of those things. If anything, all those friendships and people that I used to know, I was sort of cut off from them for a long time. And when I go back now, you see them and you talk to them about how their families are doing. know, it's a close-knit, you know, it's not all about wrestling. Sometimes it's about the friendships you make and the people that help you with your interviews and little promos and little people that help you all the way through your career, whether it's, I can remember even the Madison Square Garden as an example. Like, I used to know all the security guards and the, all the people that were in charge of security, you know, when they let the wrestlers in. But you go there for, you know, you're in Madison Square Garden for 17 years and you see them every few months you're there. You know, when I walk through Madison Square Garden when I'm in New York now, when I walk past, I still stop in and say hi to everybody because I made a lot of friends with a lot of people there, and it's nice to stop in and say hi sometimes. And I feel like that with them, and I feel like that with WWE. And there's a lot of little people that have nothing to do with the decision, say, that Vince McMahon makes in relation to me.
How is your relationship with Vince these days?
It's good. We have a good relationship. I have a good relationship, I believe, with everybody, from Paul to, you know, Stephanie and Vince. And, you know, I always think I was a pretty easy guy to work with anyway. And I think I've been welcomed back and I get treated really well. So it's been a win-win for everybody, I think.
When were you at your happiest, Brett? Is there a moment, a year, a time when you look back and you say, like, that was the best? Like, I'm nostalgic for that. I missed, that was a simple time. That was a great time, a happy time for me professionally. I miss those days. Is there one era or a year that comes to mind when I ask that?
You know, I loved so many of the years. I probably think 92, the when I won the title, was such a great year for me. I think that's when I was probably in my best form. And, I think that's when I really kind of believed that I was actually maybe for real the best wrestler in the world, and that it was important to, I always look at what I did as a pro wrestler more as I was a performance artist. You know, I think I'm very proud of all my performances, and I think my matches are great stories. Most of the guys I worked with, you know, in my career, I think when I talk to them and meet them today, they always tell me that the greatest match they ever had in their whole career was, and they'll name some match that they had me with me in a pay-per-view. And it makes me feel really proud to know that I gave so many wrestlers their best matches. And, you know, I'm very proud of my career and everything I did in it, which is probably why I was so stubborn about trying to protect it all the time. But, you know, 92 was a great year. 94 was a great year with Owen and all the stuff that happened. And 97 with the Hart Foundation, with all of us back together, with Pillman and Owen and Neidhart and everybody was great. And then when I go back to the very, very beginning with, say, WrestleManias 2, 3, and 4 and stuff like that with Jim the Anvil and the Hart Foundation, we weren't necessarily the biggest stars at that time. Our bigger days were coming, but it was so much fun being at the very, at the front of all that, in the forefront of the wrestling when it started to become such a big sensation with Hulk Hogan and Hulkamania and WWE and everything that was going on. I'm just so glad I got to be part of it, and those were great memories for me.
I fell in love with the Hitman character when you were screwed by Bad News Brown at WrestleMania 4. I felt like you were wrong there, and that's when I really got on board and you became my guy, because I was emotionally invested in your journey of, you know, righting that wrong and being the man. So when you say WrestleMania 4, it kind of like, it sends chills down my spine, because I remember being a young kid. I was at the Forum in 1988 when you and Mr. Perfect fought to a draw, my first event live. So just great memories. It's such an honor. If I could just ask you a couple more questions. I know you're really busy. Is that okay, Brett?
Sure.
Okay. What is your relationship like with AEW? Because you were sort of a surprise when you showed up to their first show. Are you working with them, or was that a one-off?
Neither. I think it was just it was convenience the first time. I'm a big fan of the promotion, and I like a lot of the wrestlers that are there, and I really think it's good for the industry if there's another wrestling company besides WWE. But you know, at the same time, it was just a one time thing, mostly because I was in the area. But I do have a lot of fondness for what they're trying to do, and I support them, and I hope that they hope to become a real big wrestling company in the next year.
Do you watch UFC or mixed martial arts?
Oh yeah, I watch it right pretty religiously. Yeah, I'm
really?
A big fan, and I'm like one of those wrestling fans that like that you see them watching wrestling and they keep moving around and jerking their shoulders and getting caught up in the mat. I'm like that when I watch UFC. My wife can't watch it with me anymore because I'm jerking all over the room trying to move away from a takedown or something. But I have a lot of respect for it. I also quite proud to say that I'm glad I made a living doing what I did in the sense that I tried to pretend and make it look real. I tried to emulate a UFC wrestler with my wrestling style as much as I could throughout my career. Because I always feel that UFC wrestling or fighting is the real, that's what we try to reproduce. Like I would say my WrestleMania 13 match with Steve Austin is as good as any UFC fight that you can find, except for this one difference. No animals were harmed in the making of my movie. And I'm so proud of that today. I'm so glad I didn't have to punch my opponent's face in, you know, and then meet his kids in the back and talk to his wife or, you know, I'm glad pro wrestling is what it is. And people have frowned on wrestling for so many years for being, you know, fake or not real or phony or whatever. But it's, you know, I think it's finally, you're starting to realize that what the great performance is and all about in pro wrestling is it's artistic, it's imagination. It's a ballet of violence that's not necessarily meant to. I mean, I think it's great that kids watch wrestling. I think it's necessary. It's a solid life builder. It builds things. It makes kids, like you said, you were such a big fan of mine when you were a kid. Kids need heroes, and I was proud to be a hero for kids and tried to lead my life in that way where I was a good example. Like if your kids were watching Bret the Hitman Hart on TV, they were in a good place. I was a good guy for them to watch. I tried to be a good hero. I tried to set good examples. I thought I achieved a lot of that. And one of the, you know, it's always hard to turn all that around and suddenly become a bad guy, say, you know, it's a lot of things that are real in pro wrestling. Like, you know, character changes and things like that, you know, affect your life. But, for me, I was always very conscious of my fans. And I always tried my best to give them the best match of the night. I wanted to have the best match every night. And I think for most of my career, I always had the best match on every card that I was on.
Yeah,
for a lot of it, and I've always been really proud of that. Whether it was working for my dad or Vince McMahon or whoever else.
Do you have a favorite fighter, a guy that you know is on the card? You have to watch him right now in the UFC or MMA.
UFC. I was a huge Weidman fan. He was, and I'm a big Jones fan.
Okay, interesting.
And I'm trying to think of his name. I can't think of it. It's the Russian guy that's got the long beard. Looks like he's from Afghanistan or something like that, but he's Russian. I really love his style. I want to see the guy that can beat him. I don't think anyone's going to beat him. I bet you he retires.
Khabib Nurmagomedov?
I think that might be him.
The guy who beat Conor McGregor?
Yeah,
he's incredible.
And there's another guy, isn't there another guy that knows him or his part, like they train together or something like that? There's another. I think there's one other fella, but I think the beauty of their wrestling is, or fighting is they're unorthodox, and American fighters and a lot of the fighters are familiar with tactics from different places. But I believe that Russian guy has a style and an unorthodox style that's unlike anything else. And that probably goes back, hundreds of years to relatives in his family and how they take, I know wrestling is a very serious thing for some of those countries, like Afghanistan and, you know, just all the Turkey and some of those places.
Right.
They've always been huge wrestling meccas. So, I mean, I love the you know, it applies kind of to my pro wrestling kind of logic where you have Japanese wrestlers and English wrestlers. And he could always learn little things from each group. You know, even Lucha Libre, like Mexican wrestlers, you can pick up one or two moves that you can add to your repertoire of moves that sets you apart from everyone else, just because you got different styles mixed in. And I see that being a very true thing with UFC, that there's a lot of different styles. And I find UFC it becomes more and more interesting all the time as the fighters are getting better and better and better all the time. So I'm a big fan. I have a lot of respect for them, but I'm so glad I chose pro wrestling as my career.
If I could end on this, Brett, you know, there was a time where you were the most famous Canadian in the world. You represented our country. By the way, I'm a fellow Canadian. I'm from Montreal. I was at the screw job in 1997. My heart was broken. So I don't say it lightly when I say I was a big fan. And you represented us so well in the country. Continuously look to you as a role model. And I'm reminded of your situation back in the 90s when you were so popular. And there's a fighter in our sport, I'm sure you've heard of him, Conor McGregor, who's going through a very tough time right now. And the country of Ireland seems to be turning on him because of things that he did. Now, you never got in trouble quite like that. But I do remember in your book, that was such a phenomenal read. You were very open about some of your, you know, misfortunes, things, missteps and whatnot. Would you have any advice for someone like Conor, a guy who is literally the face of a country? Everyone's turning to you. You're put up on a pedestal. You're a role model, but yet you're human. You make mistakes as well. For someone who is having a hard time dealing with that, did you ever have moments where you felt like this is too much? This is too much pressure. I can't be what everyone wants me to be. I just need to be my own guy. And if so, how did you get around that? How did you overcome that?
Well, I don't know that I ever had quite the pressure, say, that Conor McGregor did, but because I was always a good guy,
right?
A baby face, and being a baby face, you know, unless you're kind of a jerk and a lousy person and not very friendly or nice to your fans, and you're going to have those kind of problems. But being I was a hero or something. Most people that bothered me when I was champion always came up to tell me something nice, that, oh, my kid's a big fan of yours, or you're the greatest. Or I always found being famous and being, being able to play the role of a hero every day for people was an honor. You know, I take great pride in being a hero to kids, and I tried my best to always set a good example. Even now, I'd hate to see Bret the Hitman Hart getting an impaired driving charge or something, or they catch me with a couple pounds of cocaine in my bag or something at an airport, or an underage girl, or caught shoplifting, or, you know, it doesn't take very much to sink a career. One stupid move can ruin everything you see it happen all the time, where people make one stupid mistake and it costs them everything. And I remember I used to talk to Ken Shamrock, for example, about, he was always getting assault charges. And I told him one time, I said, Ken, I said, the next time you're going to punch somebody for saying something to you and you're going to get an assault charge, just think about all the money you're going to save and you can take all the money that you don't spend on a lawsuit and lawyers and paying somebody out, and spend that on your kids at Christmas time. And I remember he came up to me about a week later and he told me, he goes, that was the best advice anyone ever gave me. He goes, I try to remember that every time now. Whenever I get into an altercation, I just think back at what you said, and I think about Christmas and my kids, and I don't do it. And I guess in relation to what you're saying about Conor is, I would say that it's important to just always avoid, you know, if you're having a good life, don't mess it up. And he's got a lot of good things in his life. Just don't be so stupid and reckless, because, stupid things can happen and cost you big time sometimes in life.
Brett, you're the man. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. I wish nothing but the best to you and your family. I know your son recently celebrated a birthday. Just everything good to your family, I wish, because you guys were great to all of us Canadians and to wrestling fans all over the world. Such an honor for me to have you on the program. I can't thank you enough for taking some time out of your day. All the best to you.
All right. Thank you.
All right, there he is, Bret Hart. And, of course, he was joining us today to help promote King of the Ring, which continues this evening on the USA Network for World Wrestling Entertainment. A lot of exciting things going on with our friends over at WWE. Look at that. We got the first round matchups. Who's behind this? Mike? Mike Wantsover? The man. Last week, Corporate Jake took credit for this, And now we have to give proper credit. So Mike Wantsover, thank you very much for this. So I was right. Did I predict correctly that Samoa Joe was going to advance? And then we had Ricochet. I said Ricochet. Oh, that's still to come. Okay, that's tonight. And all the tournament matches featured weekly through September 10th, finals on September 15th at the Clash of Champions. What a great guy. Bret Hart, a legend of all legends. Was I too Chris Farley there, or did I balance it? You know, it's funny. You meet like your like childhood idol, and like you start to get nostalgic. That was Bret Hart on my show. Are you kidding me? That was wild. I never got the glasses. Like, I actually bought the glasses, but I never had the glasses put on me. And yes, I was at the Montreal Screwjob. That is my claim to fame. 1997, I was there with my good friend Jason Takethman. He explained to me everything that was going on, and we were sitting in the crowd, and I remember Bret getting screwed, and then I remember him trashing the announce table and the monitors and everything, and then doing the big WCW, and then showing up, and that was a whole mess of a situation with WCW, and he has been through a lot. 20-year anniversary of the death of Owen Hart back in May of this past year. My good friend John Pollock, who was on the MMA Reporters last week, did an amazing audio documentary about that tragedy. I highly suggest checking that out. And I wonder if my good friends over at the Cheap Heat Podcast will talk about this interview. Of course, hosted by the one and only Peter Rosenberg, Stat Guy Greg, the corporate Jake to my Peter Rosenberg. Troy, who's our podcast producer, always wants me to give them a shout out for some reason. They never give me a shout out, but I always have to give them a shout out. So here you go. Cheap Heat on the house. Please talk about my interview with Bret Hart later on this week. I enjoy the podcast, and you can get it wherever you get your podcast, by the way. Google, Apple, all those places and more. All right. Now, matter of moments, I'll take off my fanboy hat. Now, see, I could be a fanboy. A lot of you will say I was a fanboy. Forget it. Let's talk about Jan Blachowicz. Let's talk about what he is trying to accomplish. He is trying to get a fight against, and by the way, Brock Weaver. I mean, like you say, I know you're saying, oh, pro wrestling, why are you talking about it on an MMA show? Brock Weaver, Nick Newell on the show today talking about how it has influenced their own careers. All right? So, I got two words. You know what I'm saying? Know what I'm saying? Jan Blachowicz is trying to get a fight against John Jones. He's coming off that great win over Luke Rockhold back in July. 24-8, 7-5 in the UFC. Knocked out Luke Rockhold in his 205-pound debut back at UFC 239. He's won 5 of 6, 5th-ranked light heavyweight. Corporate J coming in super hot there with the microphone. I mean, what happened? Did you just drop the microphone? What happened there? Speak. Speak now. Forever hold your peace. He's nowhere to be found. All right, let's go to Poland now and say hello to Jan via the magic of Skype. There he is. Jan, how are you?
Good, and how are you?
I'm doing great. Now, once and for all, I want to get the proper pronunciation of your last name. Is it, now tell me if I'm right or wrong, Błachowicz?
Yes, almost perfect. Almost perfect. Błachowicz.
Błachowicz.
Yes, now it's good.
Błachowicz.
Yes.
All right.
Exactly like this.
I think we need to get it right, because maybe you'll be fighting for a title very soon, and we have to get your name right. So,
I hope so.
You have been very vocal. You want this title fight. Where do we stand? Are you going to get it?
I hope so. I don't know yet anything, but I think I deserve for that, and I hope so they give it to me.
Has your management talked to the UFC?
Yes, they talk together, but we have to back to this conservation one more time. So we're going to beg maybe today, maybe tomorrow. Because, you know, I have some small surgery on my elbow. Today I do my first, hard training. My elbow is perfect. So now I can start to talk with UFC again about next fight against John Jones, of course. I want this fight. I need this fight. And I'm ready for this fight.
Why do you need this fight?
Why? Because I train all my life and I deserve for this fight. You know, it's my time. When I knock out the Luke Rockhold, I think I prove it that I deserve to the title shot.
And so, is it accurate to say that John Jones is in? Like, John Jones wants to fight December 14th. Are they waiting on you to see if your elbow is okay? Like, if you're okay, the fight is on?
No, I don't know that. You know, I sent an email today that I'm ready to fight, and I want John Jones, and we will see what they answer. I hope so. They give it to me.
Do you think he wants you?
Maybe. We'll see. Maybe he, you know, he's got a lot to lose in this fight, you know, because if he get this fight, if he give me this fight, it's going to be really pressure put it on him. So maybe he don't want this fight, but we will see. I'm ready for him. And, you know, I've got the legendary Polish power inside me, and I will prove it in the fight. I can stop John Jones.
Do you think there is a part of John Jones that says, wait a second, I saw what this man did to Luke Rockhold. I saw him getting knocked out, the vicious Polish power. I want nothing to do with that man. Do you think there's a part of him that is feeling that way?
Maybe it's in his head, something like this.
Do you feel like he's talking a lot of people these days? I see him talking about Brock Lesnar. I see him talking about Daniel Cormier. I see him talking about a lot of people. I don't see him talking about you all that much. Do you feel like he's avoiding you?
I don't know. Maybe he I don't know. Brock Lesnar, he's not good fighter, you know. That's gonna be just, you know, good media fight. I don't know how to say it, but with me, it's gonna be really hard fight for him. Of course, if he's gonna fight against me. He just say one time on Twitter that I'm a strong and good technical fighter, so maybe he start watching on me.
Okay, and by the way, could we ask you to put the camera, because I'm only seeing like the bottom half of your mouth right now. Oh yeah, a little bit. No, there.
Oh.
No, the other way. Right. Opposite. Boom. Stay right there.
Oh, like this. Okay.
That's perfect.
I see all my face.
Now you see your face. Okay, that's perfect. Oh, this is much better.
Okay.
Wait, so you said that he's a good media fighter? What did you mean by that?
He said that he would like to fight against Brock Lesnar. Eh?
Yeah.
It's going to be a good fight for me, but only for, not like sports fight. You know, it's going to be like only good for, you know, I don't know, for likes and for, I don't know how to say it, you know?
Yeah. Retweets for attention.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're here to actually get your opportunity. And when you look around, I look at the division. I don't really see anyone else who's available right now.
Me too.
Right?
Me too. And I'm ready. If they give me this fight, I'm going to be ready tomorrow. I can go to USA and fight him tomorrow, even that, if they're going to do this.
What happened to your elbow?
That was old, small injury. Nothing serious, you know. I just have to clean it, and now everything is good.
Did you feel like the UFC wanted Luke Rockhold to beat you, like they were setting him up as the former champion, good-looking guy, to fight John Jones?
A lot of people say that if he's going to beat me, then he's going to be next for John Jones. So I beat him, so it's normal. It's my turn now.
Yeah. Did you feel disrespected in the build-up to that fight?
A little bit, but now I think I deserve for respect and deserve for the title shot.
After
when I knock out.
Yeah. After the fight, Dana White said that he thinks that Luke Rockhold should retire. Do you agree with that?
I don't care what he's going to do. He can go to retire. He can try to do another fight. I don't care what he's going to do. I wish him best in his life, but I don't care.
You wish him best in his life or bad in his life?
Best.
Oh, okay. Best. Okay, yeah. Well, because it did seem like when you guys did the face-off, like he was kind of looking at you like there was some friction there. Did you feel like he was looking down on you? Or
he don't respect me, yeah.
Yeah.
He don't respect me all the time, you know. He was, I don't know how to say it in English, but he was some kind of like rude for me, you know. It was really annoying what he doing, you know. It wasn't fun, it wasn't, you know, nice. It was really bad what he do, what he say, what he, you know, what he think about me. And he get what he deserved in the fight.
Of all your wins thus far in your career, KSW, UFC, was that the most satisfying win because you felt this way about him going into that fight?
I think so, yes. It was a really good fight for me. And, you know, the way when I beat him, it was also tastes better, you know. So, yeah, it's one of the best wins in my career.
Yeah, and have you been watching John for a long time? Like, have you been studying him, preparing for the opportunity to fight him since he's been in your weight class?
Of course, I watch him all the time. You know, he's the best in our division, the best in the world, so I have to watch him, you know. But I've got a way how to stop him. I know how to do this. And if they give me this fight, I prove that I have it right, and I will stop him.
So you know the way already how to stop him?
Of course, I know. I've got the plan, and Just I need the chance to prove it, then I'm right.
Can you share the plan with us? What's the plan?
No, right now, no. It's secret. You know, it's top secret.
Okay, but you know it. You see the game plan.
Yeah,
you have it there.
I've got it in my mind. You know, I know how to do it, and I will do this.
When you watch him now, do you feel like he's the same John Jones? Because he's been criticized as of late. Thiago Santos, Anthony Smith. Oh, he's not the same. He's not as...
He is the same.
Yeah?
The same, but we are just better, you know?
Oh.
We start catching him, you know? We become on his level right now, you know? But he is all the time the same fighter.
Did you watch his fight against Thiago Santos?
Yes, of course, in the green room after my fight.
Were you impressed?
Yeah, a lot. I say this before fight that Thiago that gonna be really hard fight for John Jones with Thiago. I know it. You know, I fight against Thiago. I trained him before our fight in Vegas, so I knew it that he is with really good shape and he's gonna be really good in the fight. So maybe if he not catch the injury in the first round, maybe he will be much do better job without the injury.
So you feel like the competition has caught up to John? It's not so much that he's gotten worse. The rest of the division has gotten better.
Yeah, this is my opinion.
Okay. Have they talked dates with you? Like, is December 14th on the table?
No, they don't talk, to me about the dates. I'm going to be ready wherever they want.
Okay. Where do you live now?
They give me the chance. I try to look, on you and to see that my face is still on the...
No, you're good. You're good. Where are you talking to us from?
Division.
Where in Poland?
From Poland, Warsaw, capital.
Wow, Warsaw. I've been there before. Yeah.
Nice. You like it?
It's a nice place.
You enjoy the state? Yeah, it is.
It would be a big deal to have a Polish male champion, right, in the UFC?
Yeah, it will be. It will be. Gonna be, all Poland waiting for this, not only Poland, because I got a lot of support from people, not only from Poland, but all over the world, So people also want this fight.
Yeah, and have you thought, if you get the opportunity to fight John Jones, and you could be the first guy to actually beat him, because the one loss he has on his record against Matt Hamill isn't a real loss, right? It was a DQ.
Yeah.
Your life will change forever.
Exactly, and I wait for that. I want that. And I deserve for that. And I believe in that I'm the one who can stop John Jones.
Okay. When do you think you'll get the word? Do you think this week?
Maybe. We will see. We will see. Now it's the time for my manager.
That's right.
You have to do a great job right now.
Yes. You win the fights. He has to get you the fight.
Exactly.
By the way, how many times...
I do my job in the cage.
Yes.
She do, on the email.
By the way, how many times have you watched the knockout over Luke Rockhold?
Oh... I don't remember. Many times.
A lot of times. A
couple thousand.
Wow. Well, it was impressive, and you seem to be the only guy out there. Dominic Reyes fighting Chris Weidman. He was maybe the other guy, but right now, as far as contenders, unless Brock Lesnar comes back, I don't see any other option for John Jones right
Me
now.
Too.
So
I'm ready. I'm going to be ready. I'm the only one option.
John Jones loves my show, by the way. Do you have a message for him? What do you want to say to John Jones, who's probably watching right now?
John Jones, if you give me the title shot, you're going to feel the legendary Polish power. And I promise you, you're gonna get the hard fight in your life. Thank you.
Well, maybe now that he hears that, he's not going to want to give you the fight because he doesn't want to feel the Polish power.
I'm waiting for that.
I'm just kidding. Well, good luck to you, my friend. It's great to have you on the show. Congrats on your last win over Rockhold, and I hope for your sake that you get that title shot against John Jones.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. There he is. Jan Błachowicz.
Błachowicz.
Yes. There it is. I nailed it. Thank you, Jan. The Polish power. Again, 24-8, 7-5 in the UFC, but, the record is somewhat deceiving because he has won 5 of his last 6 fights. The one loss, of course, to Thiago Santos. So it started off a little slow for him, but these days he's looking very good. By the way, 4 of his last 5 wins have earned post-fight bonuses. So this is a man who is... quote unquote, dare I say, on fire. So he's hoping to fight John Jones, and it seems like John Jones could land on the December 14th Las Vegas card. There's only two more pay-per-views back into the year, November 2nd, December 14th. A lot of fighters don't want to fight in New York. Like, the appeal of Madison Square Garden isn't as great as maybe we once thought, because in New York State you have to pay pretty high taxes compared to Nevada, where you don't pay any taxes. I think the taxes in New York, off the top of my head, is 12%, 13%. In Nevada, there is no state income tax, right? So a lot of fighters would prefer to fight in Nevada. Even though John Jones, from New York, from New York State, has always talked about in the past about wanting to fight in New York, I think these days he would rather fight in Nevada. So will he end up on that card? We'll find out. One fight that did get signed for that card, UFC 245, is Matt Brown versus Ben Saunders. And Matt Brown hasn't fought in almost 2 years. It was November of 2017, his last fight. Remember that fight over the knockout over Diego Sanchez? We thought maybe that would be his retirement fight. Well, it didn't end up being his retirement fight. Shortly after, he tore his ACL. He was booked to fight Carlos Condit, tore his ACL in, I think, around April or so. And then we thought maybe that would signal the end of Matt Brown's career. But he's back. How about that? Fighting Ben Saunders on December 14th. And Matt Brown has quickly become one of my favorite fighter follows on Twitter. If you don't follow him, his name is I Am The Immortal, at I Am The Immortal. His nickname is Matt The Immortal Brown. And he's just, I don't know, he's just on point. I really like his tweets. You know, for the most part, fighter tweets, fighter Instagram can be a little mundane. You know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm training for this, I'm training for that, I'm eating this, I'm eating that. I mean, it's all like, yeah, it's not exactly the most interesting stuff. His takes, very smart, not just on fighting. I mean, I like it. I really do. It's come a long way. And so we'll close up the show with a little Matt Brown talk. And then we shall say goodbye again. The UFC is back this Saturday in China, Shenzhen, China, which is, if you follow the news, a place that has been very much in the news these days. Interesting that the UFC is going back there, but they've assured everyone that it will be safe. And that there's nothing to worry about. I know Jessica Andrade is already there. Zhang Weili already lives and trains in China. And thus far, I haven't heard. My colleague Mark Mundy has been following this a little more closely. Thus far, I haven't heard of any issues in terms of getting anyone to China. Before we get to Brown, I do want to send my condolences to the Cormier family. Daniel posted on Saturday that his father passed away, Percy Benoit. If you don't know about Daniel Cormier's story, we highlighted some of it on the E60 profile. He actually lost his biological father when he was 7 years old on Thanksgiving Day. His biological father was murdered, and his mother remarried a man named Percy Benoit when he was very young. And Daniel was very close, called him his dad, called him his pop. Was super close to Percy, was a huge influence on his life. His mom and dad were cage side at his fights throughout his run in the UFC. You see the photo there that Daniel Cormier posted on Instagram on Saturday. His father, unfortunately, passed away due to cancer. He wasn't at the Stipe Miocic fight. He was at the Miocic fight last year and MSG fight last year. That was the last fight that he attended, but was not feeling well and unfortunately passed away on Saturday. And, you know, I will be honest, my heart breaks for Daniel Cormier. It has been a hard week for him. You know, he lost to Stipe, and we know how hard he takes these losses. And he was obviously very down afterwards, and his future in doubt and wanting to end on top and wanting to retire as champion. 3 days after the loss, he goes to Texas A&M and speaks to the football team there. He had agreed to this before the fight. Probably deep down inside, didn't really feel like leaving his house, didn't feel like going there, didn't feel like, you know, uplifting others and being a positive example. But he went there. There was a clip posted. I retweeted it last Thursday, sharing his story, being a positive role model for the kids. Went there, did it with a smile, and then unfortunately, just a few days later, loses his father. And then, in like the cruelest of coincidences, this footage comes out on Thursday from the Thrill and Agony video series from the UFC, where Stipe's in the back, and he wins the fight, and he's on the trainer's table, and he's FaceTiming with his dad, who tells him that he is now cancer-free. We didn't know this about Stipe, that he was dealing with that. And so, I mean, that juxtaposition right there, obviously very happy for Stipe. I mean, that's an amazing, I can't imagine the feelings that night. You win the belt, you get your belt back, and then you find out, most importantly, that your dad is cancer-free. And if you're Daniel Cormier, you see that, I mean, your heart just breaks. And so I just wanted to send my condolences to the Cormier family. It obviously has not been an easy time, and he has had a lot of heartbreak in his life. And I know everyone thinks very highly of him and wishes him the best. And I just wanted to echo that sentiment as well. And send our condolences, thoughts, and our best wishes to his family. And may Percy rest in peace. He was a great man. I had the pleasure of meeting him a couple times and was just very proud of his son, Daniel. And I just feel really bad for him right now. So I wanted to say that before we say hello to our final guest of the day. As I said, he is returning to action on December 14th against Ben Saunders. Nice surprise on Saturday morning, waking up to this news. Didn't know if he would fight again. He is the one and only Matt the Immortal Brown. There he is. Matt, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
It's great to have you on the show, Matt. I really appreciate it. So you're back. I wasn't sure if you were going to fight again. What led to the decision of coming back and resuming the career?
I love fighting, man. It goes about that far. And to focus a lot on being a better martial artist, I'm learning a lot about the real, you know, the not just being a fighter, but being a martial artist, being a teacher, helping others along their way. And I think there's nothing more that I could do to inspire, lead, motivate others and get in there and do it again.
When you beat Diego Sanchez in November of 2017, did you think that was your last fight at the time?
Yeah, I did.
You said you were done?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I was done at that point. Yeah.
And why were you done? What were you feeling?
Just maybe, God, it was a long time ago. Been through a lot of things since. I just felt like I had peaked out in the sport. Like that was just the best that I could do. And I wasn't going to get any farther. I've never really had the intention of just being around, being a journeyman or being a sort of a second place guy. And I really enjoy coaching. I've always liked helping others, and I think I'll make a better coach than I will fighter. And I like to kind of focus on that more. And I've done that just a little bit now, but I think I'm ready to fight more. I think I got more fight left in me, and I would like to make another run, you know, see how far I can go.
So shortly after that fight, you get offered the fight against Carlos Condit, which we've all been looking forward to for a long time. But unfortunately, that fight gets canceled because you tore your ACL. And I actually went back, you know, when we were texting about you coming on the show, I went back to our conversation when that news came out, and I asked you if maybe this would signal the end of your career. And you said you can't really think about that right now. You were just dealing with the, you know, the unfortunate news. Do you remember how you felt when you found out, like, ACL probably out for a year or more after, you know, thinking that you were done? You get the Condit fight, you're excited about that, and then you suffer this setback. How did you deal with that mentally?
Yeah. You know, I was just ready to just move on to the next thing. That's all it was about, right? Just keep your head down, move forward, bite down your mouthpiece and go forward and take another shot at it. But yeah, like I came back to fight Condit, but I wasn't really trying to come back at that point. I was just coming back just to fight, Condit, 'cause I think that'd be a great fight. So, yeah, now this time I'm coming back to like come back, I believe, you know, we'll see how it goes through camp and everything, but that's my belief right now. I think I've learned more in the past couple of years than I have probably in the past like 10 years. So I think I can do some good things and make some good fights out there and entertain the fans and, you know, just see what I can do, man.
So that rehab, what was that like? Like mentally, you know, to go through that at this stage of your career, did you find it difficult at first, or were you just
you were just
determined to get through it?
Yeah, it's nothing. I mean, it's just working out every day is all it is.
Okay. Was it harder or easier than you thought it would be? I mean, ACL rehab, I've heard, is very tough.
Yeah. Me and Joe Lozano were talking about that one day, and I think he said it perfectly. He's like, rehab is just tough for those people that just don't want to do the exercises.
Okay. That's a pretty easy way of putting it.
Yeah, it's not that hard.
Right.
Yeah, you just go work out. Like that's all you're doing. Like for rehab, I mean, you got to rest. Like you're not able to do what you want to do. Not able to get on the mats and roll, things like that's what's hard. But to do the actual rehab, I mean, like you literally just got to go do exercises. I don't know why people say it's so hard.
Did you know the whole time you were coming back, you weren't just rehabbing to get back to 100%. You were rehabbing to come back and fight.
No, I never knew that really until earlier this year.
Okay, when did you make the decision?
I think I texted Sean in like June. So yeah, it's been, I don't know, it took a little while to get a fight. Usually it happens faster than that, but I think I texted him in June. I just looked back there today to see, I think it was in June. And yeah, so I'm just ready to fight now.
And did you like this fight, this offer against Ben Saunders?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a long time guy. He's been in there longer than me. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's a good fight to come back to. I think we'll have some fun. He loves the clinch. He's got a great ground game. So I think we'll put on a good fight for the fans, and that's what it's all about.
And so when you get this opportunity, like you're ready in June, December, did you feel like that was a little too far away? Would you have preferred to come back a little sooner?
Yeah, it's whatever. I mean, I just like fighting, man. I'm just happy to be back in there, able to do what I love. It's really all about, you know, for me, you know, just having fun in there, man. Like just doing, I want to be the best that I can be. So I need to just enjoy the process and not burn myself out, kind of like I've done in the past. Like a lot of times in the past, by the time I get to the fight, I'm like, God, like I've said I wanted to retire so many times. Because by the time I get to the fight, I'm just wore out and exhausted, or at least fight week, you know, and then you get to relax and fight week or whatever. But I think I can train a lot smarter now. I think I have better people around me. I think I have my head on my shoulder, maybe a clearer sight of things, clear vision. I think with all those things put together, I think I'll perform better. But I'll enjoy the process a lot more, and that's what's really going to create some more longevity for me.
And by the way, I don't know if you heard this. I was talking about it before you came on the show, but I'm loving your Twitter these days and your Instagram. I love your quote unquote takes.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's,
that's cool to hear that from you. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I really think it's, I feel like you've come a long way in terms of your commentary. And I really enjoy your page. It's always very thoughtful and smart. Your takes on things, inspirational. So, whatever you're doing, keep it up. It's great. Is this something you worked at or just kind of evolved?
To that. That's cool that you say that because I do put a lot of thought behind my social media these days. Like I don't treat it like, you know, for the longest time, I mean, I had social media. I was like, what do I tweet or what do I post on Instagram? Well, like just no clue whatsoever. Now I look at it, I look at it like what I sort of reverse engineered it. Like, what did it do for me? What do I enjoy out of social media? And like John Danaher was a huge inspiration for like the things that I post. I love the way he posts his stuff. There's a lot of guys out there, I could name. He's probably one of the top ones though, but, I love when you see a post that has some real value to it. So I thought, why don't I do that too? You know, I can do it. Why not me? So I'm trying to create value in the post now, something that people want to see. Because, you know, I guess a lot of people see it. You know, I go look through the insights and stuff. A lot of people look at it. So try to create something worth looking at.
No, it's great. I enjoy it. And like I said before you came on, I'm not a huge fan sometimes of like the fighter tweets or the fighter Instagram pages because they can be all kind of the same, you know, like I'm going to work out, I'm going to eat, but your stuff is really good. And I urge anyone, out there on social media, which can be a cesspool to give you a follow and to check out your stuff, because it's very good. It really is.
I really do appreciate that.
No problem. Yeah, no problem. Have you been keeping tabs on the sport? Like, you still watching the sport during your time off, or did you take a break from watching it?
I've kind of been going in waves, man. You know, I opened my gym about a year ago, and, you know, that keeps me really, really busy. So usually on like Saturday nights now, like when the fights are going on, if I'm not with my kids, you know, I'm in the gym. I've been doing like most of the construction myself. I sit in there and, you know, I'm the owner operator. I only have a small staff of people that help me. Don't have any investors or nothing. So it's a lot of work, and it's a huge learning process. I'm learning a lot about the business and enjoying all the steps along the way, but I'm not a hands-off type of guy. So I kind of have to be in there. So that's taken a gigantic chunk of my time, and I haven't really followed the sport quite as closely as I would like to, but that's only because my mind is occupied in other places, not because I don't enjoy following the sport. I love this sport. I love everything about it. And, you know, I'll follow it for my life, man. I'm a lifer. I'm here, you know, till the day that I die.
And you're back in Ohio now.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay. Back to the roots.
Yeah, man. You know, Ohio's a good place. So.
All right. Well, welcome back.
Yeah, my pleasure. You know, I really want to build this community here. Like, Ohio has so much talent, and it's just not really tapped into. There's not a lot of people, not a lot of gyms that are really doing the work that they should be doing. There's not a lot of professionalism. There's a lot of, like, backyard garage gyms. A lot of people kind of just kind of plodding along, you know, just throwing things together. I think there's some professionalism in Ohio would go a long way. And I think that we could harvest a lot of talent. And I think there's no reason that Columbus, Ohio couldn't be like Albuquerque or Coconut Creek or, you know, any of these places that are hotbeds of MMA. There's no reason that we shouldn't have that here.
Okay, you will lead the charge, Matt. I think it's great what you're doing. And I love the fact that later in life you're assuming this role as a leader, coach, but also coming back. You're still not – I mean, what are you, 36, right? 36?
38.
No big deal. You're a young buck.
Yeah, I don't feel like I'm 38 years old. So I think I can do whatever I need to do. The only difference now is like when I do look at the division and stuff. I mean the landscape has changed, man. It's a different sport than it was 10 years ago when I started in UFC, and the divisions and the athletes have grown immensely. So I got a lot of catch up to do, and that's why I really have to be really improve my martial arts and work them, stringently every day.
Let's end on this. One of the top contenders in your weight class is a guy named Colby Covington. Are you a fan of his?
I get his gimmick, you know. I don't think anybody's a fan of his, but you know, I get the gimmick. You know, and we certainly watch him. So, you know, he's getting paid and we're watching him do it. And he looked really good against Lawler. Very impressive. So, you know, I'm not so much like not fan. There's certain guys I like watching fight. There's certain guys I don't like watching fight. The part of the sport that I don't follow is sort of the behind the scenes. You know, this guy said this guy said that type of thing. I'm really a fan of the long and, you know, Colby looked great against Lawler, so I think it's going to be a great fight with him and Usman. They match up really well together to make an exciting fight.
Great to have you back on the show, Matt. Welcome back. Great story. Great that you're fully healthy again and resuming your career again. Matt returns to action December 14th in Las Vegas against a fellow veteran, Ben Saunders. Thank you for doing this, Matt. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
All right, there he is, Matt Brown. Matt the Immortal Brown. Appreciate his time. So a lot of talk about December 14th, November 2nd, a lot going on. But again, UFC back this weekend in China. That's the next show. I think there's one more Contender Series show on Tuesday, Choo Choo Tuesday. And, yeah, there's Contender Series. There's LFA. And that's pretty much it. A reminder, we're actually off next Monday because it's Labor Day, but we are back Tuesday. When I said Tuesday, it reminded me that we're back on Tuesday at 1:30 Eastern. Corporate Jake is telling me, why 1:30 again? Someone else is using the studio, right?
Correct.
So same studio, different time, different day. Next Tuesday, that will be August. No, we'll be in September already? Oh, my gosh. How depressing. September. We'll be in September already. Next Tuesday, whatever day that is, at 1:30 will be the next show. No Monday, Tuesday. We're not missing the week. We're just going another day. You hear me? All right. We're good. Okay. I think I'm good for the day. Thank you very much to all of you. Thanks to all our guests. It's been a fun day. I appreciate all of you tuning in. And I appreciate all our guests who joined us today. 6 a.m. main card on Saturday. I love those 6 a.m. main cards, if I'm being honest, because they end at, what, like 9 a.m.? It's great. Eastern time, of course. It's great. I love it. It's a little different. And it's Jessica Andrade making her first title defense against Zhang Weili. Will history be made? We shall find out. For now, though, we shall say goodbye. Thank you very much to Nick Newell. Congratulations to him. Hopefully he gets that long-term deal. Thank you very much to Paige Van Zandt and Austin Vanderford. Thank you to them for coming in studio. And how about, I'm going to keep these. And we're going to have, whoop, as I'm about to drop it, we're going to have more of these newlywed games, all right? Maybe we'll use them for something else as well. Thank you very much to the one and only Brock Weaver. Great stuff from him. Great to meet him for the first time. Thank you very much to Jermaine Durandamy. Good luck to her. Thank you very much to the one and only Bret Hart, the legend, my hero. Thank you very much to Jan Błachowicz. And thank you very much to Matt Brown. Welcome back to him as well. If you missed anything, check it out. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Twitter, all those places and more. Back next week, same time and place. Until then, I say peace. I'm out of here.